It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis is back from VidCom. He'll have a report. Stacey Higginbotham is here. She's going to get her brand new Echo Home. We'll set ours up here. We'll set hers up there. We'll be talking to each other. A little demo and a lot more coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 411. This is the 411 on Google for Wednesday, June 28th, 2017. Dinah, won't you blow? This Week in Google is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twig. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. You can apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about, well, I think today we'll be talking about Google a little bit and other things. Jeff Jarvis is here. Actually, he's at his office. You're at work. You're back to work.
Back to work. So I'm in New York because tonight I go and tape Neil deGrasse Tyson's podcast.
Oh!
Podcast timing you.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
What are you doing hanging out with us, Jeff?
Yeah, slum it, huh?
That's always a lot of fun.
That'll be great. He's a professor of journalism at CUNY. That's where his office is. That's why he's got newspapers in the office. Also with us, our good friend and co-host, Stacey Higginbotham, from the Stacey on IoT show at IoTpodcast.com and her blog where she writes all about IoT, Stacey on IoT.
What does that mean? It's a signal.
What? Did she do?
It's never open.
What's open?
Oh, the door is open. I didn't even think about that. It's only open. My daughter's not here.
It does kind of look like poltergeist in that room behind you. It's so bright.
It's because it's my hallway and it's a big window.
Would
you like me to shut the
door? No, I like it.
Inside the house.
They're inside the house. So, as we speak, there's a massive malware epidemic spreading throughout Europe and elsewhere. A new quasi-ransomware called Petya.
Do you know there's also something called Not Petya?
Yes, and Sorta Petya. There's three.
Yeah, this is too much for me.
Get ready, because this is the new world order. I just want to say we're aware of it. We're going to talk about it in a little bit. But I think since Jeff's here and he hasn't been here and I haven't been here, I think we need to get a little rant going.
Uh-oh.
So we're going to start with the largest fine the EU has ever levied, 2.42 billion euros.
$2.7 billion.
To Google, because it pushed it, according to the EU, search results towards Frugal, its shopping engine.
Or the thing formerly known as Frugal.
Frugal doesn't even exist anymore.
No, it doesn't exist.
And, I'm not, as you know, I've criticized Google for getting into businesses that, a search giant shouldn't get into, like YouTube, like content. But I never felt like they preferred their shopping engine.
Well, they do, in the sense that those are ads, and they sell those ads. And those ads appear atop the page, and that's the way the business works.
Your article in Politico.eu, going right into the lion's den, has exactly the right headline. 2.4 billion euros for Google shopping? Really?
That was them. That was a good headline.
I like it. But then you point out that this really probably has less to do with shopping and more to do with European companies that compete with Google, like Axel Springer, in advertising.
Right. I start here. So I use every possible Google product there is, except for this Macintosh, which doesn't work. And
if Google would only make a computer.
Yeah, one that Microsoft would respect to put Skype on, but that's not a whole story. So I use every Google product there is, but I have no sense of ever using Google Shopping. I used to use Frugal. Frugal died. I don't use it.
Frugal wasn't a shopping site. It was a search engine.
It's a search engine for shopping comparison, right.
But so there is Google Shopping now, and I've never used it either. In fact,
If you type in shoes
on Google Shopping, or just in general, let's just do it in general.
In general, type in shoes, you will get ads atop the page that are Google placed ads, like every possible other kind. Oh, you don't even get that. Weird.
Let me log out. Let me do an incognito window because you know when you're logged in,
it knows you don't wear shoes.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Why would it not give you shoes? Stacy, does it give you a shoe bar
if I type shoes into Google?
I just type shoes in the search.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Hold on.
No, I don't. I don't get it. Oh, yeah, I do. Wait a minute. Here's the ad. It's not a bar, though. I get an ad.
I don't get it today either. I didn't get it today.
I get an ad for Zappos, which is Amazon.
Oh, no, I didn't get that today. No, so what you normally get is a little. Oh, maybe they took it down.
What if I click the shopping tab? Let me click the shopping. Here's the shopping tab. But this is
Google.
Oh,
no, you type in phones. Type in phones.
Okay.
Phones?
Okay.
I'm telling you, my shoes worked.
Oh, it did. Okay. Because
you've got a bar. Oh, here's the bar you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got a bar.
Oh, but if I type in phones, I don't get a bar.
Oh, that's so sexist.
Dang.
She gets shoes, but no phones. So this says sponsored. I mean,
it says sponsored. It's ads. Yes, they point to that. Yes. And no, they don't point to competitors as much as the competitors wish. And yes, Yelp complains. But I don't see any problem with this. And in any case, it's probably worth more than the shopping service is worth, the fine is. But as I say in the piece, it's not really about that. So the publishers used all their political clout to go after, and this is Springer and News Corp, and others, and to go after regulators, to go after Google. And it's been a 7-year process, I think 3 or 4 aborted efforts to settle. And Google was ready to settle and ready to change behavior, but then the politicians kept getting more pressure. No, make them hurt more, don't settle. And the politicians did. And so now we have this huge fine to be levied against Google. And no matter what it ends up being, it means that the regulators are going to be up Google's rear end for years, and all over this shopping thing, which makes no sense.
Which is ironic.
By the way, yeah. In shopping, there is a lot of competition from a company called Amazon, which Stacey will be getting to later. Right? And so, you know, I use Amazon to shop. I don't use Google to shop. Google is not paramount in shopping. But that's the way it is. So yeah.
So Google says we're going to appeal. We disagree with the result. But where do they appeal? They appeal to the courts in the EU, right?
Which, yeah. Same folks who gave us the right to be forgotten. Yeah, there's been some bad decisions today. There's one in Canada, too, we'll get to later. This is, you know, Eric Schmidt has always said when you're the biggest thing on this disruptive behemoth called the internet, yeah, you're going to be the target. But boy, are they the target on this one.
So this is the story that is continuous in technology, and we've always known that the incumbents would fight tooth and nail against disintermediation by internet, the internet in general, and internet companies specifically. And so that's what you say this is really. But there is a legitimate point to be made, and I've made it about YouTube, that when Google is in a business like content, that muddies the waters with their search. I've always said Google should be above the fray. I know they have the right as a business to pursue profit in any way they see fit. But I feel like if you're kind of you should be like almost a priesthood if you're in charge of search and completely, completely agnostic and independent. And
well,
having properties like content properties muddies the waters unnecessarily.
Yeah. Yes, and I can agree with that. Let me make 2 points. One, Google's not just a search company anymore. It is, though a lot of advertising comes from there. Advertising comes, that revenue comes from all kinds of other places.
I know, and I guess it's foolish of me to say, but I wish they were just a search company.
But this is like the EU going after Microsoft. They're fighting yesterday's war. What was my second
point? Google is not a monopoly here in the U.S., people are pointing out. There is competition in the U.S., but in Germany, in Europe, they're about 80%, 90% market share. They're very... they are effectively a monopoly in search.
But again, and they're arguing this is a search thing. The truth is, if not to give them any ideas, but if I were an antitrust person and I wanted to go after Google, the one area where they are vulnerable is advertising.
Yeah.
They have a huge market share in advertising. There's another thing, I'll give up a number right now. There's another thing on the rundown that says that Google and Facebook together now have more ads than every newspaper and magazine combined in the world. So it's a duopoly, and there's huge pressure there. And I've long said that where Google is most vulnerable, and this is perhaps what's coming back to bite them in a slightly indirect way, where they're most vulnerable is that they have the power of God over businesses. And if a link farm comes in and Google says, you're a bad link farm, and next to it is a good directory, and Google gets rid of both of them because they look similar and one actually has editorial value and one doesn't, Google makes that decision solely. And I've argued for years that Google ought to appoint a jury of advertising peers to take some of the pressure off of them. Well, in a sense, what happened here is Yelp has been yelping about Google for years and other small shopping search engines that just don't compete with Google because it's not as good and they don't have the reach and they're not going to rise up and they're not going to get the same money. But they are complaining. And Google has power over them and no cover to hide behind.
Well, and that's, by the way, and as I said, with content, I have the same problem because I'm a competitor with Google's YouTube. And if you search for tech news and you get a lot of YouTube links, but you don't get Twit links, that's also Google using its power to harm me.
But of course, their answer would be, unlike the shopping, their answer would be, you can be on YouTube for free and we'll give you money.
Yeah, but that's not the answer I want. That means, yeah, you live on our farm. And and give us your proceeds, and we'll give you a share of those. Is not the right answer there. So,
Stacey, what do you think?
I'm sympathetic to the EU. I feel like this is a case where they're just wrong. What they're complaining about is the ad bar. Google sells ads. I mean, that's the
and so they, does every and they, media company.
And they favor. The ads favor the people who pay for the ads. That's the way it works.
If you go to Axel Springer's Bild, the largest paper in Europe, and you search for shoes there, you get the Bild shoe shop and you get Bild's shoe advertising.
So they're not.
You
so
don't get Bild competitors.
The EU is not complaining that search results are modified. Tell me if this is the case. They're not complaining that search results are modified. They're complaining about the ad bar.
Well, no, I think they are complaining.
They're complaining that it confuses people, correct? Like if I search for shoes on Google, it is possible that I would not see the word sponsored and I might not understand the relationship there. I think what the complaint's
about,
right?
There's more allegations. I read the stories. I didn't get to read the full complaint. I think there's other allegations that they nefariously don't. But it's not a negative. You're proving a negative. They don't promote the competitors as much as they otherwise should or would. It's a real hard thing to prove, I think. Stacey, what do you think? I've monopolized. Speaking
no,
of
and on this, yes, I have no opinions. I mean, my opinions are the common person. I really don't. I really don't. This is that advertising. I have opinions about monopoly power in other industries, but this is not an industry I know a lot about.
I think we'd all agree, antitrust laws are a good thing. They, I think we're in this country. We're in favor of free markets. We don't perhaps have the suspicion of big companies they have in Europe, but we're in favor of free markets and private enterprise. And the one of the places where free markets fail is when one company gains so much dominance that they can use their dominance in one market to block competitors in other markets and in effect expand their dominance. And it's always been held in this country that is illegal, that is misusing. It's not illegal to be a monopoly. It's illegal to misuse your monopoly power. We've for a long time had antitrust regulations. So I think we all agree on that. The question is Google using its effective monopoly in search in Europe to establish a foothold in another business? This is what Margarete Vestager, the commissioner in charge of privacy, this is her quote, in charge of competition policy, said, Google has come up with many innovative products and services that have made a difference to our lives. That's a good thing. But Google's strategy for its comparison shopping service wasn't just about attracting customers by making its product better than those of its rivals. Instead, Google abused its market dominance as a search engine by promoting its own comparison shopping service in its search results and demoting those of competitors. What Google's done is illegal under EU antitrust rules. It and this is where, you know, I can't disagree with this sentiment. It denied other companies the chance to compete on the merits and to innovate. And most importantly, it denied European consumers a genuine choice of services and the full benefits of innovation. That's what antitrust is about. And if it's her opinion and the opinion of the EU that that's what Google did, then I understand this decision. I guess the debate now is whether Google did that.
Right.
So listening to that, it seems actually kind of interesting because it's talking about some of the issues that we have. It's the same issues people have with things like data aggregation and how in today's world, the more both network effects, the greater your network effects, the greater the amount of data you can bring in from your users, that's going to have a real competitive differentiator and advantage over competitors over time. And that gap is only going to get wider. And that actually, we've talked about this before with kind of like, how do you think about antitrust in an era where everything is, digital and maybe a lot of things are free. So I don't know.
And it's global markets. And that's, so this Canadian decision is interesting because, but I'm just saying Google is a difficult challenge because
it's very difficult.
It's a monopoly in Germany. It's not a monopoly in the U.S. And yet Google, by this Canadian decision, will be required to change its search results globally.
Which is horrendous to free speech. Horrendous.
So this is, you know, I think that
scary
even Marguerite Vestager would say this is very difficult, challenging to decide what to do. But this is what we've decided to do, I'm sure, what she would say.
Let me make a couple points about the EU decision. One, we need to point out that antitrust law is different in the U.S. than Europe. Here, it's about protecting consumers. There, it's more about, I'll get complaints about saying this wrong, but more about protecting companies, protecting the market.
Yeah, that's kind of what her statement said. We want to make
and
sure.
It's bigger than the market's problem. But I see no consumer harm here. The problem becomes, I don't know how to say this well, it's a tautological problem. Is basically she's saying that they can't compete on their merits. Well, you've got to prove the negative that if Google didn't have a shopping service, what would they be? But of course, Google is going to have shopping ads. So what does the world look like without Google? And is that what the definition of fair is? But with Google, well, Google has better services. You know, and this is the irony of the Microsoft case. Microsoft's going to force its browser down everybody. Well, no, somebody came along with a better browser, and it didn't happen that way. And if Google has a better shopping service and better listings for shoes and better advertising opportunities for those advertisers, then it does deserve to win in the market and with the consumer.
And
how do you
stop.
Prove that it's undue influence on that? That's the tautological problem. Go ahead, Stacey.
So this actually gets kind of to some of the arguments we make about network neutrality. And don't hate me for saying this, but there you're also trying to prove a negative in the sense that
True.
If ISPs get involved, they're going to cause harm. And I would say that a focus on the consumer isn't actually the right way to go necessarily, because consumers in some cases can win. Like if you think about, well, I'm not even going to bring that up because that's super controversial, but you really should be optimizing as a government for competition, because the understanding is competition is going to be inherently better. But if you go that route, then you have to look at the nature of competition and how it changes based on technology, based on user habits, based on all of this stuff. And I think it is a tautological argument. Epidemiology.
Epistemology.
I get the other hard words.
Ontology.
But I think that's just a philosophical difference people are going to have. And I think that's a fine argument to be happening. Honestly.
So Stacey,
I think it's really
necessary
stay
on that.
Right now. Sure.
So that notion of if it's just about you must have competition. Well, no. Again, monopolies aren't illegal. If you have the best product and everybody loves it.
That's not illegal. Just using.
That's not illegal.
Not in the U.S., although I think we should. It's
but
a good point that the European rules are different. So.
But culturally,
it could have a competitive impact, though. That's what's really interesting today, because the more people.
That's why the U.S. standard, I think, is a better standard, because you have to look at harm.
Right. But well, and I don't think anybody's suggested that, that Google should be prosecuted in the U.S. for this. Right. This is not. No, nobody's investigating Google.
There was an investigation. FTC documents were leaked.
Right.
But I think it was a proper decision in the U.S. not to do it.
Right.
Now, this is where then people pull out, look at how often Google people went into the White House during the Obama administration. Aha, see?
Right.
But I think that pales given current Russian activities. I'm not getting political. I'm just comparing. But this notion that competition for its own sake, then Stacey, what it also leads to is, and this is what I get all the time from Europeans. I got flustered with a BBC interview earlier today because I just, isn't it time that somebody just does something? Show me the statute that defines too big. And in essence, what you get to here is you say, if you get too big, that alone is a sin. We're not going to tell you what too big is.
Well, that's your assertion. That's not what their law says.
I think
that's what you think it means. I mean, the EU would say
about this. Shouldn't somebody go after them because they're too big?
Yeah. But really, what the EU rules are is monopolistic behavior. I'm reading from Ben Thompson's very good article in Stratechery. Monopolistic behavior is presumed to be illegal if it restricts competitors, which in the long run theoretically hurts consumers. But as you point out, it's really about other businesses. Dominant companies have a special responsibility in the EU not to abuse their market position by restricting competition, either in the market in which they're dominant. That's a different, by the way, from the U.S., or in separate markets. Otherwise, there'd be a risk that a company once dominant in one market, even if this resulted from competing on the merits, would be able to use this market power to further expand its dominance or leverage it into separate markets. Ben points out that part of the problem is, what is a monopoly in the digital era?
Yeah.
Right. And that's where I think this is actually good, because we're having a conversation about what it means to be too big now.
Yeah, because is it a monopoly when you can just say, instead of typing google.com, bing.com?
Or
DuckDuckGo. Admittedly, most people don't, but they're making an economic choice and have the right to make that choice. So, in other words, Google is winning on its merits. It's not like there's a barrier to entry, or is there?
So I think where this gets interesting.
Amazon. Oh. I'm sorry, Stacey.
I think this gets interesting when we start looking at companies like, we'll say, I don't know if Jeff is going this way, but Amazon or Google with like machine learning and improving their services. So when you
go into
Google.
You want them to do that, right? But I'm just saying, you don't want to create a chilling effect where they don't want to innovate because they would come up against the shoals of anti-competitive.
And that's true. And that's why this is a good conversation, because we have to talk about that and we have to understand. I think that's what... And the way regulators do this is through laws and through the courts and through these kind of conversations. And we're going to see how badly this works out or what happens.
Okay, and you could say this is the first beginning of the conversation.
Well, okay. I think that's what this is.
Yeah.
And I think
let me stipulate, Your Honor, that the conversation is a fine thing to have. Okay.
We're going to call this show Judge Stacy from now on.
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
I'm like, Stacy gets yelled at by Jeff. Good Lord.
No, he's not yelling.
Don't yell at you.
I feel like a student in the classroom. I'm like, Jeff.
No, it's Judge Stacy.
I'm stipulating. I'm agreeing with you, right? So let's say the conversation is good. However, $2.7 billion for this fecacta little shopping thing, the political effort to try to do a huge boom on Google for what is a minor part of Google where there is minor harm, if any, that's not the way to have the conversation. This is a political act, not a regulatory act. It's a political act. And it was started by publishers who were acting politically, who were using, in my mind, journalistic value, perhaps improperly, to force government to regulate against, to protect against their new competitors.
All right, I'm going to channel.
It's not being done here.
I'm going to channel Margaret Vestager, even though I can't pronounce her name. I'm going to channel her. This is what the European Commission's fact sheet says in this regard. We mentioned, you may have a monopoly, but that's because consumers choose you. They could easily, there's very little barrier to them using DuckDuckGo. They say there are also high barriers to entries in these markets in part because of network effects. The more consumers use a search engine, the more attractive it becomes to advertisers. So they're kind of, I think, admitting, Jeff, what you are suggesting. The profits generated can then be used to attract even more consumers. Similarly, the data a search engine gathers about consumers can in turn be used to improve results. They're saying there's a virtuous circle here that Google's taking advantage of to make it even more strong and more powerful.
It's virtuous for those consumers. Those consumers get a very good service.
Well, it's virtuous for Google, and it's not quite so virtuous if you're Alex Springer or Rupert Murdoch.
Well, then change your damn business. Don't keep on trying.
I think your point is that they don't. That it's Murdoch and Alex Springer that don't want to compete on the merits. Google's winning on the merits.
Yes.
Let's change this a little bit, though, because this is about advertising, which strong feelings, publishers, strong feelings. But the same virtuous cycles based on network effects is going to happen in services based on artificial intelligence.
Yep.
So the more data you have. So like think about car companies and even your like photo services on Google. So when you start to look at it that way, then you're. Oh my gosh, guys, I'm on this new medication and it's making my brain stupid.
Oh, can I have some of that? I'll have what she's having.
Like, oh, okay. I'm going to have to come back to that. But the idea here is that you're going to be better as a business the more information you suck in.
Yes, that's true.
And that's exactly why this clause is problematic in the internet era. Because you know, from the point of view of creating great companies, and by the way, a great company like Google benefits consumers, you want to encourage this virtuous circle. And for the EU to say, well, we can't allow that to happen because it becomes a flywheel that you can't stop. We've got to stick a stick into it so that other people get a chance to create their own virtuous cycle.
Well, not even they get to
create. Oh, wait, I remember my point. Hold on.
Go ahead. Let's stay.
You do first.
Let's stay.
It's negative.
The drugs have kicked in.
Okay. Yes. The drugs kicked in. Think about something like facial recognition. If you're Facebook right now, you have the data to do amazing facial recognition, amazing people recognition. Now imagine that being used for something nefarious and everyone's still on Facebook. There's no, when those things start happening, consumers will want to move, but they won't necessarily have that choice because the network effects and benefits will have accrued too much to those main companies. We're seeing that now.
Yeah, you see it on Facebook.
That's the flip side of this argument when it's not something nice that we want.
This is the graph that the EU decided to include in their PDF of this decision. By the way, immediately discredited because it comes from StatCounter.
Jesus.
Which shows what morons they are. But it does show almost 100%. The red line at the top. Here, let me telestrate. This is Google. This is everybody else at the bottom.
Well, you know, that's really a symbol for just change the label on this to advertising.
Yeah, but they even admit that because it attracts advertisers. The profits generated can attract more consumers. They admit that that's the part of the virtuous circle. But what they're saying is Google is completely dominant based on StatCounter.
But again, there's nothing wrong with that. The question is, what did they do wrong? Let me make two points, Leo.
Dominant company says the EU have a special responsibility not to abuse their market position.
And prove the abuse. I don't see the abuse. Two points. One, you said earlier that they want to put the stick in the flywheel to enable others to create. That's not what's happening here. They're putting the stick in the flywheel to protect existing companies against Google's creation. It's protection.
I don't think motivations, I know we can argue about if motivations matter, but in general, it's the results that matter in these things. And so I will agree with you that their motivations may stink, but the results is we're going to start having this conversation. Also, that fine hopefully will be whittled down. I don't know. I'm like, I don't care.
Don't you worry that this is going to have a chilling effect on companies? Because look, this is what a company's trying to create is this flywheel effect where there's benefit to the company and the company grows bigger because of the benefit to the company.
That flywheel scares a lot of people. I mean, if you think about how we're reacting.
It's the market.
Yeah.
We're saying Google's getting too big. That's what we're saying is, and Amazon, same thing. They've got the data, which the data helps them do this, which, at the same time, there is a market benefit.
There is, and it bothers me in two ways. It bothers me for Europe, which is the point I make in the op-ed, that this is no way to attract investment and innovation to Europe. This is no way to say that we're going to work in Europe. It's going to create a chill. And they keep on saying, we want our own Google. Well, the only way you're going to get your own damn Google is if you invest and risk. Second point, even outside of Google. So I got into an argument on Twitter, as often happens in these cases, with a guy named Jason Kent, who is the head of the horribly named Digital Content Next, which is a trade association for major publishers in the U.S. And you're defending Jarvis, you're defending Google and Facebook, and he's echoing the EU line. The problem I have with that, with publishers echo the EU line, and this is going to happen the same thing when we get to GDPR and privacy, is, to my mind, the salvation of the mass media, of the next generation of mass media publishing and journalism, is relevance and value, is knowing people as individuals, is having data on them. Data on them. So right. Now data is being, knowledge about people to build relationships of relevance and value is being demonized in this decision and across. And if the publishers take too strong a stance that to have any data, to know anybody as an individual is bad, they're cutting off their nose and other appendages. They're cutting off their future. And they're dooming themselves.
Well, much like the music industry in the face of Napster, their goal is to preserve as incumbents the status quo.
Yes.
And there's no bigger threat to the status quo than the internet and Google and this new way of doing things.
But now you have regulators and corporations.
But you can't turn the clock back. The regulators could do
everything.
They can do everything they want.
They're trying to stop the clock.
But they're trying to say,
we're not going to allow this progress to happen. And it is, I've said this on the show a million times, it is too soon to define and limit and regulate the internet. We don't know what it is yet. We don't know how it operates yet. And for the EU, the ultimate hubris here is for the EU to come in and decide, we know how the internet should operate. We're going to say, we don't know yet. You're too old.
Well, again, in this document, in this complaint from the EU, as proof that Google is helping itself, they show that Google's comparison shopping services has gained in traffic while rival shopping services have decreased. It's a success. How dare they? That's the proof that they offer. Well, look how successful Google is. You know,
what a chill success.
45.
That's what this does.
Yeah.
Chills success.
Look how successful Google is. We can't have that. So let me just ask, is 2.42 billion euros. Can Google just pay that and move on?
Because it's going to change their business and how they operate.
It's not the money. It's the consent decree that they're worried about.
But that's why I say it's such a political decision. This is political in every way. This is not – so, Stacey, I would buy what you're saying about the need for the conversation if it happened in a more sane structure.
No, companies don't have – no, because we don't have these conversations in sane structures because we're all people. We have these conversations only when there's like self-interest at play. So up until now, everyone's like, hey, we're going to be good. We'll self-regulate. We'll talk about these things. And until someone establishes a line, though, we don't know when someone's going over it. And so
Google tried to settle three or four times. They were
well, the yes, last, and that,
her prior successor two ago was ready to settle. The decision was done. And then the publishers cried bloody murder and went after the politicians in the EU and stopped the settlement.
I'm just thanking God that big business has no impact here in the United States on what our legislators do, because that clearly is a bad system.
It's terrible.
By the way, it's not over because, and we'll talk about Canada too, but the EU also has already come to a similar conclusion about Google's Android operating system and AdSense. So the other reason Google doesn't want to settle is because this is the beginning. Yeah. This is not the end.
And watch out. Android is going to be – so part of what's going on here too is that they demonize relevance and data and value and knowledge about people. They're also going to demonize free. That's what the publishers hate most. That's what Murdoch and Springer hate most. And they're smart people, especially at Springer. And they believe in this notion of creating a product called content and you must pay us for it. And free is what most threatens them. And so Android in its core business model is going to be seen, I guarantee you, it's going to be seen as virtual as a digital version of dumping.
Ooh, that's so controversial. I want to read about that.
Consumers.
Okay. Jeff, I would like you to write the idea about digital dumping. That's a fun concept.
It is fun. Actually, well, I'm writing it down right now. So, because Stacey, you know, I don't need to take your meds to forget things. I have something called age.
Pencil.
I'm getting there. I think that in addition to the medicine, I just think I'm getting older.
It's not the first time that's happened. I mean, that's what Microsoft did to compete against Netscape. Remember, Netscape was charging
for the argument. Right.
Its browser, and Microsoft moved in. By the way, got in trouble with not only the EU, but the Department of Justice because they moved in and gave away their browser. I remember when the Internet Explorer 3.0 came out back in 1995 or 6, it was immediately saw this is that's all over for Netscape.
What about things like zero rating, though, on data plans, which I know can be controversial? Look at like Facebook and what happened in India. I know those are net neutrality things, but they're also kind of digital dumping. Oh, this is such a fun area.
Digital dumping. Next on Judge Stacy.
Like, I just want to assign Jeff, like, Jeff, that's your new book. That's your new article. Do it, Jeff.
It is. That would be a good book.
Yeah. Sorry.
Digital dumping.
Jeff's like, someone else should write it.
Our show today brought to you by, I had such a nice meal last night. I made a Blue Apron meal. We just got our new Blue Apron box. So we get three meals. We get the Blue Apron for a couple. So that means it's for two people, although we always split it three ways, and there's plenty. Blue Apron delivers you all the ingredients fresh that you need to make an amazing meal, plus the recipe, right to your door. They're the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Last night, we had a delicious steak. I made, it had fingerling potatoes, which I roasted. They came out perfectly. We had a nice butter lettuce salad, and I made a dressing. Again, all of the ingredients I got from Blue Apron. It had a little thing of creme fraiche, a little thing of blue cheese crumbles. It was such a good dressing. It was this creamy blue cheese dressing. A little thing I'd never used before called verjuice. Have you ever used V-E-R-J-U-S?
We've talked about this before. This is the wine, sweet vinegar.
It's incredible.
Something.
It's the pressed juice of unripened grapes. It's not vinegar, but it's acidic. It's delicious. Anyway, so verjus and creme fraiche and blue cheese crumbles. It was the most amazing dressing. And But the nice thing is it only took me about half an hour to make an amazing dinner. I told you that a couple of nights before I made this cannelloni. It's so great. So let's take a look. Let's go to the menu and see what's on the menu this week. We've been, I should log into my account because we've been going crazy. I think we've got all our Blue Aprons through August. Now, the nice thing about Blue Apron is it's not a subscription in the sense that you have a weekly commitment. You get it when you order it. You don't get it if you don't. So when we went on vacation, for instance, we didn't get any Blue Apron boxes. You customize the recipes. You pick from the menus. They don't repeat more than once a year, so you're always going to try new, delicious meals. I think we've already ordered for this week. I'm trying to remember. That's the family-friendly. Fontina cheeseburgers or red and white. Those are for a family of four with kid-friendly ingredients. I can't remember. It's fun. This is something we do every week or so. Lisa and I'll sit down and look at the menus and pick our meals. I love this. I hope we ordered it. I can't remember. Bulgogi beef and soba noodle stir fry with marinated vegetables. My mouth is just watering. So what?
Glad you're doing these earlier in the show now.
I know. This is so mean. So this is what you get in the box.
Stacey's going to get hungry the whole show now.
Even the meat is fresh. Nothing's frozen. So you get 10 ounces of thinly sliced beef. You get one carrot because you don't want, there's no waste. You need one carrot, you get one carrot. One cucumber, one scallion, one bunch of cilantro and mint, 2 tablespoons of rice vinegar. They come in little bottles. 2 tablespoons of this new sauce that I love, the yakiniku sauce. I bought some because I liked it so much. It's kind of a Japanese barbecue. I don't know what gochujang is, but you get a tablespoon of that and then sesame oil. So this is what is so cool. You do this. Those are fresh soba noodles. You'll flip your lid. The ingredients are the best, as if you were going to the best grocery store, except it costs you less than $10 a meal, because they don't have the overhead. Seared chicken and creamy pasta salad with summer squash and sweet peppers. Vegetarians will love Blue Apron, too. How about fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn and Cubanelle pepper. I could just go on.
Ooh,
and on.
Potato crusted catfish.
Oh, doesn't that sound? Catfish is so good.
Ooh.
Isn't that good?
Red, white, and blue pizza. What's the blue?
All right, you must be looking at the family plan. Let me look here.
No, I'm looking at your screen.
Yeah.
Right there.
Right there.
Yeah.
Olives? Blueberries? Beets?
No, the blue, it's a purple potato.
Okay, fine.
Oh. Purple potato. Yeah, you don't mind? So
beets,
it comes with fresh pizza dough.
I hate beets.
It comes with tomato sauce, mozzarella cheese, garlic, arugula, peach, purple potatoes, basil, Asiago cheese, a shallot. By the way, Lisa and I both decided we're going to use shallots more often. Shallots are so good.
Yeah, they are nice.
They're sweet. They're delicious.
And I always forget to get shallots. And
I have a tuna recipe with shallots in it.
Garlic.
It's delicious.
Yeah, Blue Apron is all about shallots. They have wine choices now, too, by the way. And the wines are fun. They're not quite full bottles. They're not quite splits. So they make a wine recommendation, then you can order those. So we've been ordering wine, too, to go with our meals.
Well, you're kidding.
No. Uh-huh. It's so freaking awesome. So all I got to say is blueapron.com/twig. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with your first purchase, plus free shipping. blueapron.com/twig. There is no doubt in my mind, and Blue Apron's what convinced me, that you can have produce delivery that's perfect. The produce I get in my Blue Apron box is better than anything I ever get at the grocery store. It's amazing.
In the early days of all that stuff, at Condé Nast, we were involved. We had to get investments in some of those companies, and the logistical problems were just
tough.
Too great.
Yeah.
But, you know, was it grocery.com? What was the one that wasted the huge amount of money?
Peapod. Remember Peapod and
Webvan?
Webvan.
Cosmo.
Oh,
they didn't do groceries.
Cosmo did like a carton of cigarettes and ice cream. It's a little weird. And it was a guy
I used to order stuff on Webvan all the time because I lived in New York City and they didn't have like basic stuff back then. So I'd be like, what? No New York store stocks Rotel? What? How am I going to make queso? So.
Exactly. Ooh, I want your queso recipe.
Yeah. I love queso.
Okay. That queso recipe is a can of Rotel and a block of Velveeta cheese. It's
No.
I'm just telling you, I have lots of great recipes, but the queso recipe is just like straight up. All Americana, terrible for you.
Oh, but delicious.
Oh, it's very delicious.
Rotel is tomatoes and diced green chilies, right?
Yeah, and you can use it to anything. I mean, you can add it to your chicken a la king or whatever, and you can make like a delicious.
I don't know if we can get Rotel out here.
I don't know we can, no.
That sounds like a Texas treat.
No.
So really, you just add a can of Rotel to a block of Velveeta, and that's queso for you?
Uh-huh.
Well, it used to be, yes.
Does it all?
You don't eat it anymore because it's poison?
It's not poison, but now I usually go out. Now I don't have parties
you
where
live
I
in
have
Austin,
queso.
The best queso in the world.
Right, that's what I go out and get my
queso.
She's
Miss Fancy Pants now, yeah.
Ooh, you know the best thing? So take all your cheese rinds and like old chunks of cheese, just as much as you have if you save it all, and you throw it in with a bunch of garlic into like a little pot to melt it all down with the garlic and some wine, and then you get some crusty bread and you just dip it in and people are like, oh my God, this is delicious. And you're like, I just cleaned out the fridge.
No, I always save Parmesan rinds because they use it in sauces and stuff.
In soup. Just toss it in your veggie soup.
Yeah, that's how you make minestrone. You have to have Parmesan rind. Well, now I'm really disappointed. I thought you would have like some gourmet queso recipe.
It's queso. I have many gourmet recipes, but queso is not.
No, I think of you as like this great gourmet cook. Oh, so funny. Oh. But you know what? I bet it's delicious. We used to have a producer at Tech TV who had a Super Bowl dip. It was basically a can of chili and a block of Velveeta, and you put them in, or no, maybe it was some cream cheese too. You put it all in a crock pot and you heat it till it's melted, and that's it.
Yep.
And it was the best thing ever.
Yes. The queso is not bad. It's just you're like,
no, it sounds
what
great.
Am I putting in my body?
Yeah. It's not really cheese.
No.
It's like government cheese. So
it is actually government cheese.
Yeah. So what is this Canadian decision? This Google must alter worldwide search results. See, there was a Vancouver tech company. Small Canadian firm, which got an injunction against Google.
This is even more dangerous. This is a worse decision.
Equistech, they make network devices. And they sued another company of illegally relabeling their products and selling its own products under their brand name. Another kind of selling knockoffs, basically. They left the province, the competitor Datalink, but they continue to do business. And you can Google them, find them, and order products from them, even though, you know, they're illegal, according to Equus Tech. So Equus Tech went to court, and they got an injunction from the Supreme Court of Canada that Google may not link to these Datalink web, this competitor's web pages, and not only must do so in Canada, but now a court in British Columbia says they've got to do it everywhere in the world, and today the Supreme Court upheld that order. It's the first global de-indexing order, according to a Canadian.
From Canada. We liked you, Canada. You were the nice guys.
7-2, the Canadian Supreme Court rejected the idea that this was a threat to free speech. They say, hey, Google already does this to delist child pornography, hate speech, to comply with DMCA copyright. The judge wrote, Judge Rosalie Abella wrote, this is not an order to remove speech that on its face engages freedom of expression values. It's an order to de-index websites that are in violation of several court orders.
Not until it gets to Iran, China, Russia.
Well, wait a minute, though. We've not to date, she says, accepted that freedom of expression requires a facilitation of unlawful sale of goods.
It sets a precedent and a structure. And the court decision in Iran could be this. Or pick your country. I don't want to pick on Iran, but you know, this.
Let's say Erdogan's tame courts in Turkey decides that Erdogan, a cartoon about Erdogan.
Exactly.
That is insulting should never be seen again on the internet.
Anywhere.
And forces Google says, by the way, not this isn't just Turkey. This is everywhere.
Or the Danish Muhammad cartoons.
Right.
Or, you know, pick it, right? And now there is a precedent and a structure that we will be at the lowest common denominator of free speech on the internet if this happens.
Here's a tweet from John Bergmeier. He's an attorney for Senior Counsel of Public Knowledge. He says, Canada joins a list of countries asserting global jurisdiction over the internet. He says, copyright, maybe RTBF people might cheer this, but that does need to be some limiting principle. For instance, I don't want the UK's crappy libel laws to de facto apply worldwide. Most countries don't have fair use. For instance, we have fair use in the United States, but that wouldn't be a defense in another country. So fair use would end in the United States, at least as far as Google's concerned.
And what is the enforcement structure here?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, because that's really what this hinges on, because usually we just say,
how do they enforce this
law?
Yeah.
And we ignore it.
Oh, well, probably $2.7 billion fines.
Okay. Well, and that's, I mean, like, if you look at, like, the freak out over GDPR, those are significant fines. So
yeah, they are quite significant and proportional.
So Google gave in to, of course, the right to be forgotten, which is similar. But the right to be forgotten is only in the EU, right?
Yes, and indeed, they were doing it country by country, and that got them. And the EU wasn't crazy about it, but they didn't push back. They pushed back a little bit. Where if you are, I think what happens is this: if you're in, I'll pick a country.
The French right now are want it to be worldwide. In fact, it's right in front of the French Supreme Court right now.
So what I think happened, though, and I could be wrong here. I'm sure my chat room will correct me. I think what happened was at first Google said, no, we're going to do it only in a country. That if you search Google in France, you search Google France in France, you won't find it. But if you search Google UK, you'll find it. Then I think the French got it, so no, anybody in France can't find it. That was the next step of this. Now this is the further step that no one in the world can find it. And that's just, I mean, you talk about a higher responsibility. The judge in Canada should have seen the further implications of this. And for her to say, oh, well, but no, speech is fine, doesn't matter. Because it sets a precedent. The definition of free speech varies tremendously, Judge, across the world.
So
and the rest of the world, sadly, is not Canada.
Right.
I wish it were.
So what is Google's choice? They either do that or they get out of Canada?
They can't appeal this because it's the
Supreme Court.
But they can appeal to the local court about certain strictures or certain things about it. So there is some wiggle room in this. You know, does Google go to the world, you know, court in The Hague?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't know. What do you
do? I don't know if that gets better.
Does it go to Vladimir Putin and ask him since he's going to be our boss?
So what's the upshot of all this? Do we, I mean, does Google selectively pull out of countries? Do they go, they have to go, they go along with it or they're out of Canada, right?
You're asking two questions. One is, what do they do about Canada? And two is, what do they do about the next country that demands the same thing?
Right.
So look at what happened with the link tax in Spain. Google said, Spain, no Google News for you. No soup for you. Pulled out, right? When Germany went crazy over...
And by the way, we know that that had a very negative impact on the amount of traffic driven to Spanish news sites.
Yes, it did. Cutting off your nose, despite your face.
And cost them
also
a lot of money.
Also, when Google got into all the problems with Street View in Germany, they finally said, F it, and pulled that out. Is there a minor F it they can do here? But no, this is search.
Let's cheer up. I have in my hands... And Stacey has in her hands an Echo Show.
You know what, though? It takes forever to download the software. So plug that puppy in and just get it going.
This is not mine, but here's those tabs that you were talking about. I love that.
Oh, see? Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that's the easy opening package. Actually, Amazon's always done this with their Echoes. They've been very easy to get into. Very hard.
They're like, quick,
to stop
open it and
using.
Start buying stuff.
We don't want to get in the way. So this is Megan Maroney's. It will be associated with her account. Just
so
FYI.
I'll have to be
so
friends
you'll be
with
calling.
Megan.
Yeah, you'll be friends with Megan, not me. Good news. You don't have
I love Megan.
You don't have to worry about Leo dropping in at all hours. This is what it looks like. So we've already seen reviews on Engadget and elsewhere. It's essentially a kind of junky Amazon Fire tablet. You know, it's like 980, 1024 by 980 or something. 7-inch tablet attached to an Echo device.
It sounds good. You'll hear it in a second, actually, when it pops on.
Somebody was saying it sounds better than the old Echo.
It does. It's much more resonant.
Okay.
If I had a resonant voice, like
does it sound like?
There you go.
Hey, baby.
I was like, I cannot do that voice.
When a man and a woman decide. Oh, here we go. That it's time.
To spend $230 on a connected...
to let Jeff Bezos into the bedroom.
Yeah, I didn't return this when I canceled it.
You canceled it?
I canceled it.
Because
I just,
of...
I just said,
why?
I'm not going to use it. I'm not going to use this.
Come on, Jeff. I ordered them all.
Home.
We order everything from Amazon because, well, it's time.
I think it's a good thing for the kitchen. I'm trying to convince my mom that she wants one.
Yes, I ordered two and I'm sending my mom one. I don't have to convince her. I'm just sending it to her.
Well, see, my mom wouldn't put it anywhere otherwise. It would just sit in a box on her.
And I FaceTime all the time, and I just thought, well, this will be easier for her.
Well, so my mom and I Skype, but Skyping with my mom is just a nightmare because, you know, she's like, oh, I've got a, who am I on Skype? What's
that's
my
password?
That's
why I do FaceTime. Well, we started with, I set her up with Skype, and we ended up doing FaceTime. All right.
Well,
so
I tried to get her in Duo. Oh, listen to it.
Oh, is it going to say something?
It goes, whoa-dum.
Can you show, oh. I love that sound.
I do too.
I'm alive sound. In fact,
sometimes I turn off my Wi-Fi
exactly.
Network.
Your Echo device is ready for setup.
Okay, Echo device. Oh, first I have to put it on our Wi-Fi. I guess I'll put it on this one.
And your Wi-Fi password is automatically shown, or it was in my case, so
yeah,
just know that.
Let me not show it. Monkey... One, you know what we really should use Monkey 123 as our Wi-Fi password. Nobody would ever think we'd actually do that. Oh, it says welcome Jerry Wagley. Oh, it's not Megan's. I'm now Jerry Wagley. Thank you, Jerry, for sacrificing this. We're going to get another one apparently.
I can presume you can wipe it, can't you?
Yeah, it says it's registered to Jerry. If that's you, type yes. Because it's got Jerry's current billing information.
Yes. Don't
type no to use a different account. Yeah, no, that's me.
Alexa, bye. Bye.
We're in North America.
It doesn't confirm or ask for your password. That was kind of what was stunning to me.
Well, they've always done this. They've set them up at the factory, right? And now it's going to do the update, which takes forever.
But if you steal the box,
someone stole my box. Exactly. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, that's a good point.
They're ordering, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm Jerry Wagley. Yeah, that's me. I think I'm going to order a Corvette. How would they? That's a good point. It doesn't ask for your password.
And maybe it does. So let's see. What should I buy?
So it's going to update. So it has three buttons on the top. It's got plus and minus for volume and then the mute button. So these are effectively the same buttons that they're on the top of the regular Echo cylinder. On the back.
Yeah, you totally can buy stuff.
On the back, though, there's no connector for anything else. It's just power. So you can't connect this as you can with the Echo to anything else. So it's going to update the device. Let's install those device updates. I'm sorry, the screen's so bright.
Your device will restart twice.
It's going to restart twice. Powering off. All right, well, I'm just going to put this over here. And we'll let it. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Anthony Nielsen came running in with a handheld camera so that we've got more. Who's that for? Okay, here's Megan. So if we want to open another one, no, we'll save this so that you can get another unboxing later.
You can have them talk to each other.
Mine are coming too. All right. So while it's updating,
cancel.
We'll do some other stuff, and then. What we want to do is do a call between you and me, right?
Well, that's what I would want to do. Yeah. But
so
if you
can
don't
do things
do
like Echo Call Dad, show the front door camera, play top songs, show my calendar, set a timer for 3 minutes, show my phone. I like the show. So I have Nest cams. Would it show the Nest cam on this? I think it would.
It might if Nest
integrates.
And
I know it works with the Ring.
Yeah, Nest may not have integrated with them yet.
Oh,
Nest.
Because it's Google. Yeah. It does. Yeah. It works with Ring, Honeywell, Arlo.
The Logitech cameras.
Okay. So
my August doorbell that I hate.
So, but I can say I go to the Ring doorbell. So that's good. So it'll go to my Ring. Ring is a sponsor, I should mention. I would like it to use those Nest cams. I just bought some Nest cams.
I started talking about this while you were setting up because I thought there was going to be like a long pause. I should have known better, but they were talking on the chat room about wiring Ring doorbells, sponsor alert, to old houses and old wiring.
Yeah.
We're just going to say this because I did this, so don't do this. I blew out my doorbell transformer because it was older. So if you're going to wire these video doorbells, spring for the 24-volt transformer because the 16-volt is what
I'm
most
sure
houses
it says
have.
That somewhere in the
exactly.
manual. But who reads the manual?
Exactly. So that's my pro tip to you guys installing doorbells.
And I, by the way, owe an apology to Ring because I made a snarky comment a few weeks ago about them not being a sponsor anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And I got a call from the founder of Ring. I said, what are you talking about? Of course. And they bought a whole bunch more ads. So I apologize.
Hey, Ring.
Getting the call from Jamie.
Yeah. Jamie called. Literally, I talked to Jamie. Jamie said, first of all, you don't remember me, do you? I said, no. He said, I've been on Twit because Jason Calacanis, I didn't remember this, but years ago, auctioned off a Twit ad. And Jamie won for his first product, which I don't even remember. It was an app or something.
Doorbot. It was terrible, but Jamie will admit that. He learned a lot.
Yeah, and then he went on Shark Tank, right? And then, he founded Ring later. So I said, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. So I said, I'm a huge fan. Of course we love you. Anyway, so I apologize. I was snarky for no good reason.
Did you get in trouble with your wife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course I did, because she sells
the ads.
I feel
like Leo's probably in trouble with Lisa a lot.
Pretty much all the time. Yeah.
I mean.
No, Lisa's really, you know what? I should be.
This is great.
I should be in trouble all the time, and she's an extraordinarily patient person. For instance, you know, when you marry somebody who's on the air every day, all day, it's probably, you know, you don't sign up for this, but inevitably, I'm going to talk about her as I am right now, and she's not crazy about that, but she tolerates it. She's very kind. She says, "Do you always have to use me as an example?"
Well, she's your wife.
She said, well, at least tell the truth. So, well, I exaggerate for purposes of humor. Anyway, you don't need to get in our marital cheese. So that's a queso dip you don't need to put your chip in.
Oh, before we went to the Amazon break there, so the Canada case, I added to the rundown. There's now one in Arizona where a judge ordered articles taken down in the U.S.
At least it just blow me a kiss. I love you, sweetheart. So this is a snowball we're going to see.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. By the way, Amazon is announcing a smart home camera control with a Skello. So I guess thank you, Scooter X, for developers. You will be able to. I don't know why my machine just turned itself off for some reason.
Oh yeah, no, they launched this last week.
Okay,
and this is what everybody's Nest? Using. Well, I don't. They have Nest has to make the decision to integrate.
Oh, because they're Google, you know, they want to work with Google Home. And
but you can use the Nest on the Echo. That was a big deal when that happened last year.
Okay, we're still updating.
Yeah, and it's going to play a 5-minute video. After that,
it's going to play. I have to watch a 5-minute video. So let me ask
sort of
you:
fast forward
are you going to turn on drop-in? Is there anyone you know well enough to allow them to turn on your camera?
If it's in the kitchen, I would let my parents do it.
You don't.
I would never have it drop in my bedroom, though. That's just crazy talk.
No.
Well, and I don't know. I guess you don't use your kitchen the same way we do.
I don't want. I think we're heading to GMI. We're heading right.
So
into
in
GMI.
Well, it's a big
right
kitchen. There's a lot of room.
Now Lisa,
it's in my office now right now, and I would let like a colleague drop in on my office.
Drop in. So for those who don't know, is the weirdest feature. In fact, we were talking about this the other day in our editorial meeting. I said Amazon turns this stuff on just to see if somebody wants to use it. They're taking the metrics. It's all about data gathering. They don't know if somebody's going to want this, but the idea is that you can turn on the camera on this thing without warning.
Let's see if this works. Okay. I just realized this. I'm sorry. I just got too excited.
I'll have what she's having.
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to see if I can drop in from my phone app onto the show that's here in my office.
Ah. You have to obviously open it up, give permission, and, what I'm curious about is there any, could you, is there a warning to you as the drop-in?
Yes.
Can you say,
recipient?
Yeah, can you say, oh, no, don't, no.
So what you can do is, okay, here's what it looks like on my app. You get this little bar in the conversation saying, oh, is my screen too bright?
Yeah.
Hold on. I was shooting video, so I needed a bright screen for that. Okay. See the drop-in bar?
Yeah.
Ooh, drop-in bar.
Okay.
So let's drop in on somebody. I get the choice of Dottie, which is the bedroom, my Echo that's downstairs, and my Echo Show. These two,
how would you drop in on an audio-only device?
Let me tell you, because this is a cool feature they announced 2 days ago.
Oh, this is the intercom.
Intercom!
Yeah. Oh!
My husband and I were actually using this to be like, what's up? Come down, it's dinner time.
Oh, we're definitely going to use that. We have Echoes in every single room.
And the light turns green when you drop in on somebody, and it chimes. So if I drop in and no one's, I can try to see what happens on the show. I
could say like, Lisa, dinner's ready. Come on in. And it would go and, oh, that'd be so cool.
All right, here we go. Let's see what happens.
When I was a kid, my mom got so tired of yelling upstairs, dinner's ready, that she bought a bell.
Oh, see here, I'm dropping in on my show.
Oh.
There I am.
There I am.
And now I consider myself the greatest.
So I ended that for audio quality purposes, but what it did is it showed me a blurry version, and then I would have had to touch it. And if I touched it, then the camera turns on. But it does see the blurry version. Or
okay.
I think I could have also verbally said,
that's not so bad. So you have to give permission. There's no drop in without your knowledge.
So if someone else wants to drop in on me, and let's see how I can, I don't know, what I don't know is how to add drop in, had other people to drop in yet. That's
how do
my
you
next.
Lie about not being at the device when you don't want to talk to somebody?
You just say, I can't talk right now. Remember those days?
I can't talk right now. Wow.
Or like, well, I mean, it's not like a jerk thing. It's just like, I don't know.
Your daughter says that to you? Are you going to accept that answer?
Well, it's my daughter. If like there's an echo in her room and she's got a boy up there, I'm going to be like, well, excuse me, yeah. He's coming on up.
This changes the dynamic considerably. Does your daughter have an echo in her room?
She's going to, because she wants ours, and she has a Sonos, but since the Echo, it's a much better UI for her because she doesn't even like having a smartphone. This is really interesting, y'all. She hates charging a phone.
Yeah.
So she just like hangs out and texts people on her computer. This is going to change when she moves around more. But right now she just echoes and does everything that way. And I think it would be really interesting if you could text and access people through these devices. She may be like, oh, shmoan, I just want to talk to something in my room and then take something on the go with me. I don't know.
Did you ever see the Dick Van Dyke intercom episode?
Oh, no.
I did not.
It's called All About Eavesdropping. Let me see if I can get it to play here. This is...
Somehow I will get rid of that other man.
Oh, you. So there's apparently the neighbor's intercom starts... Oh, there it is. The neighbor's intercom starts playing back in the Van Dyke household, and they start listening in. Oh, I can't find it.
I'll let you know. Okay?
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Echo wants me. Introducing, here it is. You want to watch a short video? It says brief.
It's 5 minutes.
I'd rather watch Dick Van Dyke.
Introducing Amazon Echo Show. It's everything you love about a skeleton. But now she can show you things. Play movies from Amazon Video, view your photos, or see what's on your calendar and to-do lists.
Is it too bright?
And now there's a new way to be together. Make hands-free video calls to friends and family. Like this. Hello, call Tina.
Oh, dear. I apologize for everybody at home.
Message or call someone on their supported Echo device or the Echo app on their phone. Ready for some music?
Echo is very sweet. The room with bold stereo that looks sound. Like Mary Tyler Alexis, Moore.
Show today's most popular songs.
Here are popular.
Oh, see, there's a new word. Show. Now you Alexa, can show because you've got a screen.
And with Amazon Music, you can follow.
Oh, this is great. I'm now going to replace all my Echoes and Dots.
Helps you really? I would wait.
Of your busy life.
Why? I'd
live with it just for a little bit.
Yeah, all right. It's also a lot more expensive, right? It's like 200 something.
230. Yeah. I think you can buy two. If you buy two, you get $100 off.
I did that because I bought one for my mom. I think she'll like this. And you know what? You're right. The speaker is much better.
Isn't it?
It's actually very good. It just shows you how much we're all in here. Jerry bought one. Megan bought one. I bought a couple.
Here's the thing I don't know. You're not going to watch a movie on this. You're going to watch a movie on your big screen.
No. What it really is what you saw with the, I think, the songs and like weather reports and stuff like that, right?
Well, CNBC actually just did a skill where you can show the news. Like, again, think about those kitchen TVs people used to have.
Or you have it in the bathroom or...
Used to?
I'm sorry. The kitchen TVs people apparently still have.
Hey, Jerry. Do you want me to start a 30-day free trial of Echo on a Music Unlimited? Just remember to cancel it.
Still.
Okay. I'm loading it. Please wait. Now, what is it doing?
So, here's the question. How do we connect for call Jerry?
So, there you go. This is the interface that you see all the time.
Echo show is ready.
Wait a minute. What? Somebody's already calling me. It's Jerry. Hey, Jerry, what do I?
I'm very confused.
Oh, he's calling you from
his
app.
You have Jerry's device, but Jerry's calling Jerry's device. I'm so confused. I can't.
Hi, Jerry.
Jerry's calling from the Echo app. Escalate app.
I'm great. You know, the quality on this is fantastic.
It is.
And you see that this is my picture, so it's kind of a wide angle picture.
Yes, totally. I can see Anthony and everything.
Yeah, Anthony's the camera guy taking it on the other way. You know what? That looks pretty good.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, who's that? Lisa, we're going to put this in the bedroom, in the kitchen, in the closet, in the bathroom. We're putting this in every...
Is this a drop-in?
Yes.
No, this is a call. This is not a drop-in. Or is it a drop-in?
Is it a drop-in or a call?
Jerry's saying it's a drop-in. So that's just like a call. I don't have to...
Now, what happens...
No, you have to answer a call. If you tell someone to call, you have to actually answer it.
All right. This is cool. All right. Bye, Jerry.
Did you have to touch the screen?
Did you get a busy signal?
I had to touch my screen. So I don't think this is it. He says he did a drop-in, though.
Right. So when you drop in, he gets a blurry vision.
Yeah, we saw the blurry of him too.
But when you call someone, and you can actually call people in your own house, although I'm not sure why you'd want to, you can actually.
How would I call you?
You would say, call Stacy.
If I were your friend.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Kevin and I, and I can't. I'm going to say,
show the
I don't
screen.
Remember
this
how Kevin
the,
and I.
The default
up, but,
screen just sits there and it shows the.
With a fingerprint.
Wow, that's an ad.
Oh, yeah. So this is really interesting. This is what I wanted you to see.
Is it
so
news?
There's it's news. You get these notifications and you can set it up in settings. If you pull down from the top screen, pull down and see settings.
Yeah.
If you go to settings, you can change the home screen is what that is.
Now I know how Ginger Rogers felt. So I can tie this to Bluetooth. That's nice. And then I can see what my home screen can do. Home card preferences. Rotate continuously. That's the default. You can just rotate once. And then I can have notifications from other services. Is right. Is that on or off? That's not communicative at all, but I presume that's on.
Otherwise, it'd be dark, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah, that's a big difference. Upcoming events. Yeah, drop-ins. See who's available from your contacts list. Is Stacy in your contact list?
No, and I don't know how to add people to my contacts list. This is what...
I didn't know I had an Amazon contacts list.
Oh, you go to your... Okay, you go to your Echo app.
Go to your Echo app, Jerry.
To the little people sign.
And go to the people sign.
And that's your contacts.
Okay.
So, and it uses your phone's address book to find people you know who have an Echo device or the SLA app. These are the people I can reach. So I don't actually have anyone from Twit in my phone.
Well, I don't have your phone number either for obvious reasons. I think that was part of the court order. But
Yes. We shouldn't be doing the show at all.
Yeah. I'm not allowed to be within 5 feet of you. We'll move the screen.
So I can, like, Karsten should have it, or I can send it to Karsten if Jerry wants to give me his contact information or however.
Interesting.
Oh, Jerry did it. Oh, no. He sent me his Gmail.
Yeah.
Jerry.
So add Jerry. So we want to call you. I want to call you.
All right. Hold up. This requires, like, dexterity I don't usually
I'm looking
have.
At the new, really redesigned Google News. It's kind of strange that Google would redesign a product like Google News that I don't even think, like, anybody knows they still do it.
And there's a real problem here for us. A real problem.
Why?
Search for Google.
Okay. In this...
The search bar right there. Search for Google.
Google.
Okay. All right. And you'll see, this is pretty. It's Google Stories. Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now scroll down.
TechCrunch, Fortune.
Scroll.
CNN, CNBC.
Go all the way to the bottom.
All the bottom, yeah. The selection and placement of stories on this page were determined automatically.
There's no more. That's it. Oh. You get one screen load.
Oh, that's not good.
That's not good at all for us. And I went to Bing.
Because we're not on the front page, you're saying?
No, it's just if you do a search, you only get so many results. I already tweeted about it, begging them. I need more. I use that every week. I go through like 15 screen loads to prep for the show.
Oh.
Wait, I'm missing exactly
what's
happening.
It ends.
So it used to be an endless scroll, and now it doesn't continue.
Page after page after page. This is a problem. Karsten is probably upset now. Are you, Karsten?
Here's this. We don't use
using Google.
Yeah, I haven't used Google News in years.
really? That's how I do it every week.
Whatever it was called.
Google Reader.
Google Reader, yeah.
Here's a story I missed. See, we ought to use it. Pregnant 19-year-old fatally shoots boyfriend in YouTube stunt gone wrong.
Jesus.
Okay.
That is scary.
That's terrifying. You see that? But that's what we missed by not using Google News. All right, so Jerry is endeavoring to contact... To add you to his list. I mean, his Echo.
I added Jerry to my contact list. And I'm trying to get the Echo, and I opened and shut
Ooh,
my
Echo.
Oh, it
does indoor temperature. What's the temperature inside?
You don't have any smart home devices. To get started, go to the smart home section of the Escala app.
I'm sure I don't know it from
you.
All of... Well, hold on.
Well.
What's the indoor temperature?
Currently, in Austin, it's 90 degrees with mostly cloudy
skies. Oh, you know. Oh, no, that's outdoor temperature.
That's outdoor.
Clouds in the sky with a low of 74 degrees.
Oh, look, sea turtles. That's pretty. No, okay. You don't have to. It's all right, Anthony. You can relax. Poor Anthony. Every time I say, oh, look, he picks up the camera. So can I call if I said, and by the way, I don't know what we're going to do about this. You have to rename it to something else. Anyway, so I apologize to everybody whose echoes are going off at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Call Stacey Higginbotham.
I couldn't find a contact matching Stacey Higginbotham. To see
I may
contacts,
need.
It doesn't pronounce
Alexa
your name
app.
Right either.
Well, that's like water off a duck's back there. I may need a phone number. Here, as he sent me his email.
I've been working on the railroad.
I've been working on the railroad by Cedarmont Kids.
Oh, dear Lord.
Stacy's going to start marching down the aisle.
Like, it's the recessional time. Oh, dear.
It's the speaker's much better, and it filled this room, didn't it? Oh, and it's putting the lyrics on.
Oh.
We're just going to resume.
Oh, Jesus, karaoke.
I think we can play this without violating any rights.
I don't know. There's some civil rights that are being violated.
Will this, seriously, will this do karaoke?
Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
Well, but but you're saying along with the voice.
Stop.
Oh, you mean? Okay. Hold on a second.
Without the.
Let's go. Listen to Bohemian Rhapsody karaoke.
Bohemian Rhapsody isn't included with Prime, but is available with Amazon Music Unlimited. Would you like to learn more?
Here.
Dinah, won't you blow? It stopped on a very good lyric. Listen to the Star Spangled Banner karaoke.
The Star Spangled Banner. United States National Anthem by the United States Marine Band.
But it's not playing the lyrics.
Well, here.
I'm sorry. Alexa, stop. I used to work in radio, and whenever the Star Spangled Banner started playing at an event, you couldn't interrupt it.
Are you serious?
So we would always try to get out of the event. That's why at the baseball games, you never hear the Star Spangled Banner, because once it starts, we out of respect. You got to keep going.
So try Show My Audiobooks.
Show My Audiobooks. Well, it would show mine, but I don't know if you have audiobooks, Jerry.
Oh, right, Jerry.
Show My Audiobooks.
I don't see a book title, but I don't know if you have audio. Your book library is empty. To buy audiobooks, visit audible.com.
Man, and if European Union ever gets a hold of Amazon, they're dead.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, yeah.
How's traffic?
The fastest route takes about 15 minutes.
Oh,
to show you a map.
So I'm not getting a map. That's what I was hoping for.
Oh, okay.
But I just got a picture of people on the road.
you got clip art. Nice.
So if you just ask for the news, what we'll show you.
What's the news?
Here's Stacy's flash briefing.
Yeah, that's just a normal flash briefing. Oh, but what do you get in it? You might get more information.
That's what I said. You get anything on the screen.
Yeah.
I'm just getting NPR, but CNBC just announced something today where they're going to put
clips in.
Actual content.
Yeah.
Stop.
Show me a photo of a hot dog.
I get the reference.
Oh, but wait a minute. There's
I
can have Prime photos
seafood.
In here. So it says to set up Prime photos, download the app. That's interesting. So you could use this as a picture frame, because if I had Prime Photos and I have photos in it, I could ask for specific photos. That's kind of neat.
So I was trying to figure out, because there's an option to use your personal photos even if they're not stored on Amazon.
Poor doctor,
but I
Mom.
Can't figure out how to get that.
Her Amazon Echo is going off every time we say the A word.
Just hit Hit that microphone.
I don't. Yeah, just mute it for the time being, and I apologize.
It will show you your calendar.
Who can I call, so, Jerry? Do you know anybody I can call? But do they have theirs set up? No.
I'm sorry. Jerry, do you want to be like my friend and tell me your phone?
It won't ring
number?
Your phone. It'll only ring your Echo. Echo doesn't Echo to phone calling. It only has Echo to Echo calling.
No, I know, but it's not recognizing him in my contacts as someone who has an Echo device.
Ah, I wonder how. Oh, that's, Jerry, did you send her the address you used for your Amazon account? You did. Yeah, so somehow Amazon has a way of recognizing whether you have an Echo or not. And apparently it's not doing that.
And maybe it just does it like once a day. So maybe it's not continually running that call.
Yeah. Okay, but hey, we get the idea. I was able to call Jerry. That worked great. And it is a fairly wide-angle camera. I have to say, I was worried because I read the reviews that said this is a terrible screen. But it's not a terrible screen. It's actually for where it is and how it's positioned, it looks great. I'm actually more stoked about this than I was.
Oh, it is through the phone number that you use for your Echo account. I'm reading the instructions. Hey.
Well, he gave you the same phone number he uses for his Echo account.
He gave me his email. I didn't get a phone number.
Oh, you didn't get a phone number.
So that may be the issue.
He's going to send you his phone number, I guess, because you have to add that. She has to add your phone number to her contacts list. It's in the
signature. Yes, and there's a way.
Oh, look in look in his email. It's in the signature.
Oh.
He's one of those people who doesn't mind if people call him.
Wow.
By the way, am I stealing a number if I say that Facebook went to 2 billion monthly active users this week?
That's fine.
Oh, it is one of your numbers. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I got all this.
I'm not going to touch the other ones. You're a smart man.
Why I
have
multiple numbers.
Isn't that amazing? 2 billion. And Harry McCracken in Fast Company did a very good article about the growth team and how they have worked to get to 2 billion. What I didn't know is they stalled out at 70 million. They thought for a while, that's all we're going to get. Remember, Facebook started 13 years ago, and it's grown to 2 billion users in that 13 years, but it wasn't a steady growth. So, in fact, the growth team was created when they hit that plateau of 70 million users, and it was those guys who came up with all these interesting ways of creating growth, I guess. Some smart people. How Facebook used science and empathy to reach 2 billion users. Really nice long range.
Well, so they'll get accused, of course, of manipulating people's brains.
Oh, yeah.
Wait till the EU gets a hold of them.
You know what I liked? One of the head of the growth team today said, we don't consider big data, we don't think it's all that growth is all about big data. He says growth's all about empathy, and the data gives us more empathy, more understanding of people, and that's how we grow.
So there's some other numbers in the next web story that 175 million people use the love reaction every day. 800 million people like something every day.
I really wanted to use the pride flag. It was there.
Okay,
for...
Jerry and I are connected.
Oh, I heard a bing. Okay, so should. There's a message.
You should just be,
there was a message for Jerry from Stacy. So I can now, can I call you? How do I call
just
you?
Just say drop in on Stacy.
This hell, drop in on Stacy.
Stacy Higginbottom, right?
Right.
Can you see what I see? See, I see Twig, and you should see blurry me.
I don't see any nudity at all. I'm very disappointed.
Here's my...
And then, it's cool how you come in. That's cool. It doesn't just pop in. You slowly fade in.
Oh, I guess that gives you time to stop picking your nose or to grab a shirt.
Yeah, here we go. I think this is a good camera. I think it's a good view. It's at least as good as, it's not quite as good as a Skype view is, but it's like, can you compare that? Flip back and forth between our view via Skype and our view, not you, Stacy, Karsten. So I think Skype's obviously a lot better camera. But I think for a video call, this is usable. It's easily. Roughly the same. It's roughly the
this
same
is, this is
angle.
World's Fair quality, yeah.
World's Fair quality. Yeah, it is, isn't this? 1964 World's New York World's Fair.
Here we are.
AT&T demonstrated the camera phone. Finally, here we are, 50 years later, we actually have a camera phone.
Stacey looks more dubious on this than she does on the show.
It's my profile.
No, all right, I'm going to turn it around. So Stacey, so you can see me, just so you can see what it looks like. Now, I'm well lit, remember. I'm in a lit studio, so I have good quality. And actually, when I turn it around, you look pretty good. This is good.
Yeah, this is very good.
This would be a great... And the nice thing is you're not holding something. You're just relaxed. You go... So anyway, Stacey, I got this pitch I'd like to give you for my new IoT business. I think this is good. All right, I don't mean to do an ad for the Amazon show, but I'm impressed. What do you think, Stacey? Are you?
I think the video calling is good. And here, can I hang up now or should we keep doing this?
You can hang up.
Okay. So hang up.
The quality is very good, too, I have to say. And we'll have to see over a longer period of time. Oh, it gives you the time of the call. Ooh, it's got pretty screen.
Pretty picture.
I think I would want this everywhere in my house.
What's the little notification there, Stacey? Or Leo?
That's probably a message from Stacey.
Oh, well, you've got a lot of notifications now.
Stacey's home.
Well, why am I not getting that? Oh, I think I turned that off. Hold on. I said...
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, and you can put Do Not Disturb on. Now, it's not a physical shutter. Oh. Are you calling me again?
When are you getting that thing?
I just called you by accident.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, Stacey. Are you there?
I think it turns the volume up at the beginning of the calls because I had turned the volume all the way down.
Oh, so you can hear that I'm going, Stacey.
Stacey.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good.
Here I am turning it back down again.
Yeah. Okay, this is cool. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call you again. I don't really want to talk to you. So goodbye.
You can turn the video off and you can end the call. So two options there.
I just tapped that video off or end call. All right. This is cool. Now the intercom. How does the intercom work? That's not the intercom. That's drop in. Or is it drop in?
Well, here, let me. Well, that's drop in. That's the same technology, but I could also. If I drop in
it's
on...
It's not an intercom if I have to accept, though.
Jeff, do you want to be... You've got an Echo right with you, right?
No.
No, he's not at home.
Oh, because you're at your office.
Yeah.
I can go and run and grab a dot and then plug it in and show you. The green light goes around and it starts listening. So I can drop in on my kitchen.
Jerry's going to go in the other office and intercom me, right?
Okay, there you go.
All right. Try. He says, I'm going to try. You can do it. Can you do it from the Echo app? He's got an Echo in his office.
Don't eat that. No.
Don't eat that. That's her Echo. Oh, my God. The dog just ate the Echo. I presume, and we'll have to go deeper into this. We're going to do a full review on the new screensavers, but I presume there's a way to say, these are off hours. Don't call me in 2 a.m. Dr. Mom, please. I beg of you.
I think
That's got a lot. Drop in on Stacey. Oh, somebody's calling me. See, is this intercom? This is not good because I have to say yes.
That's Jerry's home. So that's Jerry calling you.
Right. But I have to press.
You got
to
say answer. You got to click.
You got to say answer.
Oh, so it's not an intercom. It's not. Drop Echo. I mean, hey. That's got a lot. Drop in on Stacey.
Stacey Higginbottom, right?
Right.
Make bacon.
But this is the same thing we did before. This is no different than calling you.
Well, no. If you call me, I have to answer it. If you drop it right now.
I'm hearing your audio, though, without you doing anything. So this is the intercom.
Yes. Well, this intercom and drop-in are kind of the same thing. The difference is you only let certain echoes into your drop-in list.
And drop-in without it. So you don't have to accept to hear the audio. You have to accept to hear it to see the video. But we don't have to. So that's why it's an intercom. I could just say drop in on Stacey and then you'll hear my voice and we can talk.
Right. Except for after the show, I'm going to not let Jerry have drop-in privileges.
Yes, I would.
It looks like this.
Okay.
Can you see
Jerry
my screen?
Jerry W. Twit. Yeah. So you can call.
Oh, Jerry, that was your phone number. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Nobody saw it. And if they did, Jerry, just say hi.
Jerry. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
There, it looks like this.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'm just, you know, on first glance, I think this is a pretty compelling. It's too bad it's so expensive because one of the reasons I do have Echoes in every room is because the Dot was so inexpensive and I could put Dots, you know, I could, if $40, I could buy five Dots or whatever. Not that many. Three Dots. Now all of our Echoes are absolutely. Voice stuff? Say again?
So can I mention, since we're on the topic of voice, can I mention some other voice stuff?
Yeah, move on.
So yesterday, John Borthwick's BetaWorks, you know the BetaWorks folks,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Held a voice summit showing off, they had an incubator, a beta camp, as they call it, being BetaWorks, with eight voice companies just in this field. And just a few of them to mention, which are really interesting. One is called John Dunn. Two folks left the company that does, what is it, the AI company.
Viv,
whatever that Amy company is, right? And so they did a demo where you give your agent an instruction and it calls and uses voice with human beings. So they demoed. You wanted to find out whether this certain florist has peonies. So ask the so and so florist whether it has peonies, and it called off. We listened to it and it says,
"Hello, I am calling.
You have peonies?" and they say, "No, we don't. Thank you very much." And then it reports back to you, "No." Then they said, "Find me peonies." And so it could call, you know, 20 florists in New York. And then it comes back with the answer, "I found peonies at this address." Really interesting. So you have the sense that the two agents will start, because the company has its phone mail jail and you have your own agent, and they're just going to negotiate with each other until they come to peace.
That was Facebook M's initial idea. Remember that?
Yes, right.
So this is actually happening.
Is really two smart people to another company that I found really fascinating called Neuralex.ai. Brilliant guys, Jim Schwabel, founder. They have found, and this, there's scientific research to this effect, and they're commercializing this, that voice samples are effective devices to help the diagnosis of especially psychiatric conditions.
Wow.
So imagine if they took this show.
They finally know what drug Stacy's on.
And it's all kind of, yes. And it's all kinds of signals. How many words you use, what kinds of words you use, how fast you talk, and so on and so forth. Just fascinating data in there. So I've, of course, obnoxiously stuck up my hand and I asked the founder, "Have you used voice samples from the President of the United States?"
Oh, boy.
And he didn't want to answer.
So, which means he has.
Yes, of course he has.
And he doesn't want to share the result with you, so you can imagine what the result must have been.
There's another company called Earplay, which you can use today, where it's the old shtick of doing the story that you then have a place in. It gives you choices. It's like the old, what was the game we used to play where you were the wizard
telephone?
In the jungle? With,
oh.
Yeah.
Dungeons and Dragons?
No, the simpler one.
Oh,
It just came out open source, and you played. You got all excited
Zork.
About it. A few weeks. No,
The
earliest one.
Yes.
So
somebody was stuck.
Adventure.
It gives you a choice. And how does this do stories, or how does this do? I think what journalistically is interesting. How does it do? No, skip that. I know that. Give me this instead. It gives you a choice. Real quickly, a Spoken Layer, which is a company I like a lot. I've liked for a long time. They're a structure to add human voice. Towards. So they've got there's just tons of stuff. A third of the news on Google Home News, they do. And so you can get the New Yorker human voice, and they have a structure to sell out and do that. So there were some other companies there, but I just wanted to mention that this whole voice thing is fascinating. Dennis Crowley from Foursquare was there. Foursquare, which we talked about the story a few weeks ago, has really become a tremendous data company. So Dennis was there, and he confessed. I don't think it was Chatham House Rule. I think it was Stream, so I hope this is okay. That is his young child. First four words, the fourth word the child learned was a skull.
Oh, boy.
And somebody else said, "Oh, yeah, I'm hearing that all the time." That's just quite common.
No kidding.
Isn't that amazing?
I don't know if that's good or bad. I think it's kind of
depressing.
I don't know
either, but I thought you'd enjoy that. Isn't that cool?
Wow.
You know, at the end of this year, we'll know from the Social Security database research. I don't know if it comes out immediately, but we'll be able to track the popularity of that name.
Oh, you wouldn't name your kid that. In fact, I would think it would be the opposite. The popularity would plummet to zero.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But you'll be able to see that data.
Just don't name your kid Echo or Computer either, because those are the alternative things. So. I'm very excited now. You know what? I'm feeling kind of bad. I got two, one for my mom. I think I might keep it.
Why? Just give one. So this is the same thing the Nucleus had.
I want one by my bedside.
No drop in.
Don't let anyone drop in on that one.
Well, no, family can drop in on that one. They can't see anything. They can only talk to me.
Well, even then, can they listen? Do they not hear until you say okay?
No, they can listen. I can, if you wanted to hear my kitchen right now, I would drop in on it and you can hear whatever's happening down there.
See, yeah, you don't want that. Mom and dad are fighting. Mm. Or.
Or the alternative.
You know, I really feel like we are entering, do you have any Xanax? Because I feel like we're entering a very, I'm worried about two things. One, all those things you just described, Jeff, yeah, they sound really cool. But I also feel like we're going to be in this very rapid period of innovation where there's lots of stuff that we don't really know how to incorporate into our human bio.
So the founder of Schwebel from Neuralex said, because I asked him about the privacy implications here, and he said, you know, if I call you and leave a message on your phone, you own the copyright to that.
Oh, this Neuralex thing. Let's ask about this because this is a big deal. When you have these sorts of things, how are they approaching FDA approval if they need it, or B, even peer reviewed? Because
So
here's the thing. So yes, they're going to go for FDA. He said, And Jim, if I get anything wrong, please let me know and we'll correct it next week. He said they're planning to go for FDA, but for the earliest stage product, they'll just go for anxiety. And I can see.
Hello, Leo. This is your Echo.
People who are anxious.
You're sounding very nervous.
It could trigger your Fitbit to do the breathing exercise.
Well, it could. It could.
Well,
bad. Ariana Huffington comes on and tells you to go to sleep. But it could have an impact on your medication. So at a consumer level, it tells you about you. It probably will not ever diagnose you. It will be a B2B to the doctor.
Okay.
And the doctor gets the ability
to... That's not the only thing that's making me nervous.
No, I agree.
It's take that, and then what is apparently happening right now, which is massive cyber warfare and the sudden rise of the amoral... hacker, whether it's a state or sponsored organization or an individual, and this is what we're seeing in the Ukraine, and you have those two together, suddenly I am a little worried. I have all these devices that are listening and talking to me, and have all these bad guys, and there seems to be no check on these guys, and I feel like we live in we're heading towards a classic kind of dystopia.
And they're going to know things about you. This is where we've discussed this many times. You know, I argue that you can't control knowledge. You can't control the gathering of information, but you have to control the use of it. And so does it become illegal to do a psychiatric analysis of us on this show?
Well, the chat room's been doing that for years.
Yes.
So this is nothing new to us.
Dr. Mom has certified us long since.
Oh, my God.
Wait, she has not certified me.
No, she loves you. It's me. It's all about me and a little bit about Jeff.
I got my issues.
I mean, of course, there's a solution to it. It's to not buy these devices and it's to maybe move somewhere where there's no internet. But I'm just
there's you're missing an obvious solution. Hey, we set rules about how we can use this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You use the days. Dr. Mom says it's not illegal, just unethical, and that's right. The rules of use of data.
Believe me, ethics have gone out the window. That's why this growing group of amoral hackers. See, it turns out the only thing that's really prevented people from being completely malicious to one another is society and norms. And there, we've raised a generation, I think, of people who don't have anything to hold them back anymore.
No,
they feel they suffer from extreme anomie and misogyny. They don't feel like a part of society. And
not the whole generation.
No, but enough.
Some goes within it. Yes. So, Leo, I recommend highly, highly. We don't have time for this. I don't think we're going to go into full detail this week. But I wrote a piece while I was gone on media manipulation. Data and Society, which is a think tank in New York run by Dana Boyd, released a spectacular report going exactly where you're going. That catalogs the bad guys and who it is and how they're doing it and why they're doing it. So it's everything from gamer gators to the so-called men's right movement to the alt-right to terrorists to trolls. So I read that. Then I read, and you should read this, but you're going to get really paranoid. I linked to it in my post, the NATO Handbook on Russian Information Warfare. It is the script for what we're going through. I'm not saying the Russians are doing it all, but I'm saying that the techniques are they're learning from each other. Then I read a RAND report on Russian information warfare. And you're right, Leo. These nefarious actors are out there, and they will be able to exploit certain things. You don't need the whole society. The norms of society may indeed find it repugnant. But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And then you get in the mode of, oh, my God, something bad could happen. Kill the Alexas first.
Well, read the cover story in the June Wired magazine. How an entire nation became Russia's test bed for cyber war.
That was a great story.
Andy Greenberg. This is essentially the story of what's going on in Ukraine.
Yep.
And Russia's,
they're using the same techniques.
Russian state hackers have cut the electricity. In some cases, they have faked election results. They have sowed fake news. They have perfected cyber war, a wide-ranging variety of cyber warfare techniques. And Ukraine is the test bed, A, because they're already in a war with the Ukraine. I'm sorry, Ukraine, not the Ukraine. They're already in a war with Ukraine. But B, because they want to see. It's an experiment to see how well these things can work.
Well, now, we're the experiment, too. So let me give you a couple quotes.
Well, this is in, for instance, in Greenberg's article, he points out that they did something in the Ukraine election, which they then duplicated in our election shortly thereafter.
Right.
But we're also seeing this week the Petya ransomware, which comes out of, as far as we can tell, an accounting firm in Ukraine, which was either hacked or, which I think is the most likely case, or themselves or bad guys. We know that a lot of ransomware...
Wasn't Rosneft a target of it?
Well, that's what's interesting. A lot of ransomware is coming out of the Ukraine to fund their cyber warfare against Russia. In any event, this is a... It seems likely that Petya is not created by an individual, but created by a state-sponsored group. But it's hard to say, and it's brought down some very big...
yes.
Like Maersk.
Yes.
Very right. Merck and Maersk in hospitals. And this is WannaCry times 10. And I think this is going to be the year we look back and say, oh, crap, this is when it all started to go downhill. And by the way, this one also takes advantage of a number of NSA discovered.
Mm-hmm. So should the NSA, what's your opinion and Steve's opinion? Should the NSA... just go ahead and reveal how all this stuff works.
They should immediately reveal all the exploits. So should the FBI. So should the CIA. Because at this point, everybody has to have a chance to patch. The problem is that people don't patch. So, for instance, this Petra, if you patched in all of your Windows machines, if you patched them in March, you wouldn't be vulnerable to it. But people don't update them. And all it takes is one computer that hasn't been updated in a hospital, for instance, where they can't update all the computers to infect the rest of the network. And so there's a risk revealing these because as soon as it's revealed, it will be exploited. The problem is much of it has been revealed. This is a mess.
Well, and this is, it's one thing to tell people to patch. It's another thing to talk about how to implement patches. And I was actually at an industrial IoT event for Honeywell and their plants that refine oil and make drugs and all these other things. And there was a conversation about patching because all of these people realize it's a big deal, but they're like, if I patch something, a machine on my line, and I do it without the vendor's say-so. I void my warranty. I can also break things further down the line by having other partners' stuff go down because it'll suddenly not work with other equipment on the line or sensors. And for them, it's not just... up until about now, their risk analysis has always been, well, I can't patch because I can't afford the potential downtime without support from my vendors, you know? And now they're like, do I take the downtime? Do I run the risk of having downtime because of Petra? Or do I run the risk of downtime because of patches? So it's not as simple in every situation as saying, patch your crap.
Yeah, I know there are companies that are stockpiling Bitcoin so that when they do get bit, they have something to pay the ransom with. Now, I have to point out that Petya, at least the main variant of Petya, in order to pay the ransom, you had to use an email address to a German email company, and then the hacker would then send you the thing. The German email company closed that account. So pay all you want. You're never going to get unencrypted. So... I don't know, Stacey, you tell me, out of business or patch your machines?
Well, I mean, like, but literally up until probably last year, for a lot of companies, their risk analysis was very different.
Yeah,
right?
Sony's is famous. Sony's famous for that. So, see, Sony said, oh, yeah, it's too expensive. We understand we're just going to absorb the, and I have a feeling that they might change their tune after what happened.
And then the next thing is, not all of these places, like hospitals, I talk to hospital CISOs, and most hospitals, one, HIPAA requires you have some sort of IT administrator.
I know, they can't do it. No, I know they can't do it.
Their IT administrator's like a nurse.
Well, and they,
in
even,
like small rural
even then,
places.
If they update, yeah, they have to recertify. And so they can't just update all the time.
So there's that. It's a mess. Then there's also... equipment is still being built and spec'd out for like 15 years.
Right.
It's really scary. I mean, like...
No, it's just, there's no obvious answer to this. That's why I'm feeling so dystopian today.
But we can do it. Okay, I know that I am super positive, but I...
It's Stacey the Riveter.
But Stacey, here's the... I'm usually the optimist. Here's the problem. You can solve the technical problems... You can't solve the psychological problem.
So you can. And this is what was exciting about the industrial thing. And this is where I think it gets really interesting. So their mindset is very different than the IT world. I talked to this guy and he was like, if your guys on the factory floor see a faulty ladder, they know what to do. But do they know what to do in the case of, their case, it was empty USB drive.
We have to train people. I agree. That's good.
No, but I'm talking about different psychology.
Well, and I know that, you know, yes, people are always going to be conned and people are always your weakest link. But there are actually, once you recognize that and start thinking that you can train against it and that you can build kind of some sort of wall around people, and I don't mean an actual wall or even a software wall, but right now we think about cybersecurity and IT vulnerabilities almost entirely as... technical, and we need to be thinking of them as humans. And
well,
you see,
yes,
Google doing this a little bit,
and that's one narrow slice of it. But remember that these attacks also attack the power grid. They also distribute fake news. They also attack election results. So it's more than just say train the worker to understand what to do. This is the problem.
Yes.
Is that these state actors are willing to act in a scale unprecedented. Here's an article from Bleeping Computer quoting a Trend Micro story. This is a website, and there are a number of these. They're underground fake news marketplaces. This one's in Russian. Mm-hmm. And at these websites, customers can purchase services ranging from discrediting journalists to promoting street protests, from stuffing online polls to manipulating a decisive course of action, such as election. For a mere $400,000, which is nothing... to a country, let alone, I mean, a billion, George Soros could do this. You can completely undermine an election.
So please allow me to read from the NATO, from a Russian paper quoted in the NATO handbook. quote, the main aim of information psychological conflict is regime change by the means of influence on mass consciousness of the population, directing people so that the population of the victim country is induced to support the aggressor acting against its own interests. Does that sound familiar?
Bingo.
It says here, too, another paper says, information has become the same kind of weapon as a missile, a bomb, and so on. But it allows you to use a very small amount of energy or matter to begin, monitor, and control processes whose matter and energy parameters are many orders of magnitude larger.
So that's kind of my point, which is, it's attacking a hospital with malware and ransomware, but it's also a lot of other activities. And and if you look at the Ukraine, read this article. I know you both did. I'm saying to the audience, read this article in Cover Story of Wired, because it's kind of not this one, the Cover Story of Wired by Greenberg. It's kind of, well, it's chilling. It's all about how
all this Russian stuff is chilling. Yes.
Yeah. Andy Greenberg. And so you have a state actor, and there's probably more than one, but we can at least pinpoint Russia, that has the will and the means to destroy a country, in this case Ukraine, and frankly, I think they're holding back. I think they're pulling their punches, because a lot of this is just a test tube for something. They don't want to reveal everything they can do, because what they're really interested in is making sure all these weapons work. And at some point, I suspect they will apply these for real en masse. And we are completely unprepared for this.
Yeah, and in the end,
furthermore, we have an administration that is terrified of making its own election, suspect, and yes. So they don't want to confront this.
Well, this whole fake news house of mirrors. One last quote. At the highest level, I say in my post, they attack truth. Quote, multiple untruths, not necessarily consistent, are in part designed to undermine trust in the existence of objective truth, says Nathan.
Can I say we knew this was happening 6 months ago?
Yes, we did.
We knew this was happening. Everybody knew this was happening. The Obama administration knew it was happening, and they were caught between a rock and a hard place, because they didn't want to look like they were influencing the election. So they didn't really do anything. Even though we knew it was happening.
So are the fundamental beliefs in truth, democracy, the American way, are being undermined. And so, Stacey, that's my only point about psychology, that even if you make everybody clean about how to deal with USB drives, they go home and watch the news or the Twitter feed of leaders or whatever, or bots influencing media. The other thing about the data in society showed is how something starts in 8chan and bubbles up to InfoWars and bubbles up to Breitbart and bubbles up to Fox News. And then CNN finally says, oh, well, everybody's talking about it, so we have to cover this. And the bad guys have won in setting the agenda. The Rand Report says the bad guys have a huge advantage because it's a lot faster to make up stuff than it is to report stuff. So they set the agenda. They get out there faster. So they get more volume.
That same fear that you have, that you're talking about on the fake news front, and I'm not saying that it's not it is a legitimate concern, and it's faster now, but I don't think it's different. We've had that same, I mean, in a sense, that's how we've gotten to great acceptance of, like, gay marriage, for example, or even civil rights, although apparently a lot of people apparently aren't really big on that. But these sorts of things happen both for positive and for negative things. And right now we're very focused on this because it's been used to detract a lot. And I think the key isn't to say, holy cow, we're living in a dystopia. It's to say, holy cow, this is happening. We have made the world better before. Let's change the conversation and do that again. Because maybe we don't use the tool of fake news if we can, but I guess that's what I'm.
Can I vote for you for Senate, please?
I would, like, I've considered running for office.
Oh,
I don't think I would win.
So fast.
You'd be great.
I mean, well, I don't know if I'd want to do it for public service reasons.
You might have to leave Texas.
Yeah.
I think it would be more compelling to start the conversation in Texas.
That's exactly right. I agree.
Meanwhile,
here's the good news. Google's YouTube party app is available now without an invitation.
So everything's fine.
Pay no attention to those negative nannies on that Twig show. Have a party with Uptime, the YouTube social viewing app. I feel like that's this show is schizophrenic in this regard.
It is.
Yeah, we were like, ooh, Echo Show, Echo Show. Oh, we're all going to die.
But you know what? This is the world we're in. And this network, not just this show, but this whole network kind of is, that's what this network has become about somehow. Twit has become about technology. At first it was, isn't it great? Look how it's changing the world for the better. Then it was like, oh, crap.
here's something actually that's cool for using technology for transparency in changing the world, possibly for the better. iOS 11, if you're playing with the beta versions, it's showing you when apps are using your location.
Yeah, well, it's done that for a while.
It does. I don't have an iPhone, so I didn't.
Yeah,
know.
Apple's been really. At least Apple pays lip service, and I would say they're probably sincere in it and very good about privacy. And for a long time, when an application uses your location, it will periodically, iOS will say, hey, just so you know, Facebook's using your location information. Do you want it to continue to do so? Now, most people are going to say yes because there's a benefit to that. But if we're an app, you know, that you didn't think needed that, you know, Snapchat now will show you where your friends are at all times.
Yeah, that was the famous Gawker Stalker map,
right,
or Uber's God mode, right?
God view. Well, in that case, it was just Uber knowing where
it
you
wasn't
were.
Your friends. It was just Uber.
Yeah.
Well, this says it's actively using your location is what the bar says. Yeah. So not just when it's using
to look. I don't have my iOS 11 device here, but they may now give you a list of apps that are actively using it right now. But they've always warned you, and there is a setting that's you can retract permissions. Right. So I have to say, it's pretty clear that Apple would be a better choice if you're worried about security and privacy.
Recommended for journalists.
Yeah, it'd be better to have an iPhone. But I also think it's not immediately, it's what we don't know is it's not perfect either. We know there are hacks and exploits. We also know that Apple has a lot of the information that, you know, Apple doesn't play this up, but they can see everything. If they were required to submit it, for instance, by a government on your iCloud, they can see the content of your messages. So, I mean, I think there's a major risk in carrying a smartphone of any brand.
Yep. But again, then a risk of what happening to this is where the harm discussion has to occur.
No, and I'm not worried about companies, and I'm not worried about Google or Facebook at this point. I'm worried about governments.
But even then, why are they going to target Joe Schmo with a Android phone on the street?
Well, that's just a version, Jeff, of the if you're not doing anything wrong, why would you care?
Yeah.
No. I don't think no. I think this is risk management. If you are a politician, you have a high risk. If you're a bus driver, what's your risk? Not that the bus driver is an important person.
So keep your head down and everything will be fine, but whatever you do, don't appear on a podcast about
that's what people tell women. They're like, just keep your head down and don't upset people and you'll be fine.
I'm digging myself a hole here, which I don't think I should.
Sorry.
Should doing.
I'm like,
I get what it sounds like, but I'm trying to say something different. I think that we have to, because here's the risk. We could damn near shut down the whole internet because all the bad things that could happen. Companies and governments go through risk management. So will individuals need to go through some level of risk management as they make decisions about who to share what with and why and what could happen. And the risks vary. That's all I'm trying to say.
Okay, yes. And I think – and that's true. And I think people don't understand those trade-offs as well as they should. But I also think they're driven by they don't have the same information that a government or a more sophisticated person. Like, that's why I'm pro-transparency.
Agree. And I also agree with you very much, Stacey, that we need a conversation and we should be talking about this in a positive way to say, well, can we do about it? And we will figure it out. There's going to be some damage between and some bad lessons between here and there.
By the way, Stacey, I think you're right. I think there is, in fact, a new feature in iOS 11, this blue bar. That's what you were talking about.
Uh-huh. It says, this is using your application or using your location right now.
Okay.
But I'm always willing to be wrong on Apple stuff because I do not use it day-to-day.
Apple has done all the things I mentioned, but now they're going to put a blue status bar when an app is using your location while running in the background.
Which is kind of cool because then you can be like, wait, why is this? And maybe you'll start deleting more apps. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it certainly would be nice to know if, you know, an app that doesn't, for any obvious reason, need to know where you are does that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an interesting use of Twitter. Petya Payments. Somebody set up a Twitter bot that watches payments to the Bitcoin account tied to the Petya malware.
Jeez.
The depressing thing is...
Transparency!
Depressing thing, it's only received 45 payments totaling $10,000 so far. So
why is that depressing?
Because it's causing untold millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, right, in damage. And the hackers who created
it
are making... And they're not making any money. But this happened last time. This happened with WannaCry as well.
If you store your valuable data, not on your machines, but at AWS or at Google, how much at risk, you had to rebuild everybody's PC. But if you had a discipline about storing the data off those machines and elsewhere, how much at risk are you for an attack like this?
Well, your service providers could become the risk vector.
Well, let's say you use Carbonite, or I have a Synology NAS, and I back up everything separately there. And blah. I mean, the problem is that Petya and others don't merely delete your data or encrypt your data; they also bring your whole network to its knee. You can't continue to use the computers.
So it's not the individual machines; it's the whole network.
It's the whole network, and that's why Maersk. That's what, I mean, Maersk is a massive Danish container shipping company.
Yeah,
They literally shut down their operations all over the world because their terminals were infected and they could not do anything. Now, I'm sure they have backups galore, but this has been 3 or 4 days now. And by the way, this echoes not just to the company Maersk, but all the companies who are waiting for deliveries from Maersk containers and all the companies that use, you know, Maersk.
All those just-in-time supply chains are going to be.
Yeah.
This is why the Nintendo Switch is hard to get. No.
All of this for $10,000.
But it is, in a sense, if they're doing it for profit, this shows that it's a crappy profit maker. Yay. If you're doing it, though, to just piss people off and show how stupid everyone is, which is kind of...
I'm of the opinion now that most of the WannaCry and Petya were government sponsored state hacking. And that the goal
economic motivation is a lot easier to deal with.
The goal is disruption, not Bitcoin. Yeah. And the Bitcoin is just, a MacGuffin. However, I have no evidence for that, but... These are very well written tools. I mean, they're quite impressive in their scope. They look a lot like the tools written by state sponsored hacking. We think WannaCry was North Korea.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know.
I would guess this one's Russia because it came out of the Ukraine. Out of Ukraine. I keep saying the Ukraine. Hey, you were at VidCon, Jeff. We're going to wrap it up. We've been going on for a long time, but I just wanted to. It looked like last year you came back all energized.
Yeah, and I am again. It's such a good conference. And the brothers, the Green Brothers, are just the best. I got to spend a little time with them. And they just put on a culture that matters. So there was a lot of discussion about politics. The YouTube keynote, which is usually a big deal. This time Susan Wojcicki was interviewed on stage. And there are a few things to reveal there. Facebook was much more of a presence than before, straight out sponsor and doing a lot of things, and they care about video. And Fiji Simo was interviewed yet again on stage. Jack Conte did some proper victory laps for how well Patreon is doing. Talked with Hank Green on stage.
Good for Jack.
Jack's the greatest. They're so just glad I finally got to meet Natalie and tell her I'm a fan.
Oh man, I love. They've been. We've had them perform for us in the studio because they're from the area.
Yeah, they're just great people.
Pamplemousse was the band.
Pamplemousse, yeah.
But then
Jack
realized how hard it was to make money as a YouTube sensation. He created Patreon to support and foster creators, and it's been a huge success.
And the great thing about Jack's startup versus other kinds of startups is he did it to solve a problem. He did it to solve a for creator. Yes. His own problem and that of fellow creators.
Yeah.
VidCon was great, and hats off to them. Another good program. I think there was... 28,000 people this year or something like that.
Amazing. Did you go to the Try Guys Evolution of Viral Video show?
No, I didn't get to.
Well, you can watch it on YouTube. Yes. It's actually pretty funny. I'll just play a little bit, but it's kind of all the biggest viral videos over the last 20 years. Starting it's really fun, starting with the dancing baby. But this is VidCon. Lord, look at this. Right, this is like a rock show. YouTube stars will do anything for yes. views, right? I thought this is pretty funny. I watched it for a while. But listen to the crowd roar. This is like a rock show.
Familiarity, yeah. This is
it's their childhood, man.
And
yeah.
The other thing that's showing up is when you see the audience, every single person in the audience is videoing this on their camera phone as if, I don't know what, they're going to create their own YouTube.
People watch this.
Peanut butter jelly time. This is actually pretty impressive.
I'll show this to my daughter so she can see what she missed before.
Well, yeah, I think you'd have to be like, this is probably for the late 20-somethings. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly recognize all of it, but...
Although, I will say my daughter knew about VidCon and she was very jealous, Jeff, that you were there.
What is the age group? What is the age group at VidCon? It feels like it's predominantly teenage girls.
It is predominantly teenage girls. My daughter's 20. She still enjoys it. The problem was they need a way to get like college age people together. But I'd say it goes from, listen, there were 10-year-olds who want to be there. I'd say it goes from teenage, 13, 14, up through about 24.
And this screaming audience, though, is screaming for videos that that were big,
and boom goes the dynamite.
Like 10, 15 years ago. So they've got to.
I ran into one couple older than I am. That's all. They said, yeah, we started coming 3 years ago because we brought our kid, but the kid doesn't come anymore, but we do.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, my God.
There's,
I like turtles!
You know, and then I look at what Apple did with Planet of the Apps, which is the most, I think critics agree, and you must have to put on your TV critic hat once again, Jeff Darvis, the yes. most god-awful television show ever created. Unfortunately, there are 9 more still to come. And I look at Facebook, say, we're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on fiction and nonfiction, short form and long form. I look at what the hundreds of millions YouTube has spent.
Yep.
And they all want to be Netflix. They all want to be Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Apple has hired some Sony.
But that's not the power of... Well, so I among others, urged the industry track to do one of those great panels they used to do at Web 2.0 where they have a panel of teenagers just talking about their media. And so they have
that's a great idea just to know what the young...
It's a great... Yeah. It's always a good panel. Always fascinating. And if you're willing to listen to them enough and shut up as adults. What was interesting was they all YouTube. But not so much Snapchat, Netflix, and Amazon.
Didn't YouTube learn, though, that it was a mistake to put a lot of, make PewDiePie be a Hollywood-style celebrity? That these YouTube videos succeed because of their kind of underground nature?
Fishiness. I think so. Yes. Yes.
And yet now you see Apple and Facebook going down that same path.
I think they don't understand. They're trying to recreate mass media. And listen, if you get a hit in mass media, it's a great business thing, but the risk is high.
You get a viral hit on YouTube, there's nothing.
What's so great about walking around VidCon is you're walking around the first floor, which is the fan floor in the expo, and some, geeky 15-year-old comes walking along. You have no idea who that is. And suddenly that person is just mobbed by screaming people. The way I explained to my daughter what it was like for me, I go to a DLD conference in Munich every year when it's the same time as the German Oscars. And it's in the same hotel. And so I see all these people who are wildly famous in Germany, and I have no effing idea who they are. That's what it is for me at VidCon. Right. And there's all these people who are stars, complete stars to a small but rabid group of people. And by the way, Leo, the amount of recognition I get on the floor of VidCon because of this show and because of your network and the adoration to you and the adoration to the Twit network is wonderful.
Oh, I should go next time. I could use some adoration.
You should go.
Send me. I'll bring my daughter.
Well, yeah.
Mom of the year.
Your daughter would love to go, wouldn't she?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Why don't we do a panel next year that says, God damn it, podcasts were not invented yesterday, and go to some of the...
Did you see the revenue growth in podcasts? Did you see that stat? I think I tweeted it.
Feel like old media when I go to places like that. I don't get it at all.
I just feel old.
Well, I was going to say, are you sure you don't just feel old?
Let's talk about the revenue growth in podcasts. This was podcast breakthrough year. Whoa. Podcast breakthrough year. I don't know. Where did you find that stat? I would like to see that stat.
Let me find it.
Revenue like growth for podcasting. Oh, here's the IAB study.
Maybe it was IAB.
I don't like the IAB, by the way, because they're trying to impose
this is the IAB revenue
old
study.
Media rules
yes,
on new media advertising. We have to many advertisers now come to us trying to get a IAB generated contract, and we have to explain to them, no, that's not how we do business. That's how the IAB thinks we should do business.
Yes, this is an IAB study. Oh, and it was actually from June of last year.
Yeah.
So let's see if their predictions
growth
measured
forecast
up.
For this year, $220 million. That doesn't seem like much given the billions that are spent in mainstream media.
Yeah, this was purely like, hey, podcasts, you can make money.
I don't know where they get their numbers. I don't know. You know, we finally realized, we really need to become members. It's very expensive to become a member of the IAB. No normal podcaster can become a member, right? What was it, $50,000? And $10,000? And a fraction of your did they want a percentage? Yeah. Did they want a percentage of our revenue as well?
No, that's if you get bigger.
But we decided, Lisa, to her credit, decided we need to be heard with this group. So she participated in some feedback to them in this survey. You participated in this advertising revenue study?
I did.
So this includes our numbers?
Yes.
Well, no wonder those numbers are so good.
I was going to say, I started my show in 2016, so clearly.
Yeah, you clearly are adding to this big pile of dollars.
I need to go to my other podcast boyfriend in about 5 minutes.
You have another podcast boyfriend?
He has a better date. He has Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, that guy. Well, let's do our picks of the week after this word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is the future of mortgage lending. They were, the Rocket Mortgage realized, Quicken Loans realized that the mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was old-fashioned. So they created a product just for you and me, the modern internet user. You could do the whole thing online. They created partnerships with financial institutions so you don't even have to go get your paperwork. You can submit it with a touch of a finger. And because it's all computerized, they can, based on your income, your assets, your credit, analyze all the home loan options for you in seconds and find the one that's just right for you. So it literally, the turnaround on a loan approval is minutes. Minutes! I compare that to what I do. Lisa and I, when we bought our house 3 years ago, it took more than a month. This is so much better. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. RocketMortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 30 from Quicken Loans, rocketmortgage.com/twig. And we thank them for making this show possible. Jeff Jarvis, give us a number, then I'll let you go to talk to that Neil deGrasse Tyson guy.
Yeah, him. Pah, pah. So my number is 180. At VidCon, YouTube announced the support of a new format, VR 180, which is basically half of VR. And they're going to have some new cameras coming out, which are more stereoscopic in the old sense of two lenses. And that's why I wondered whether when I saw All About Android, I wondered about the two cameras on the back of the Note 5. Not the Note 5, the whatever. What's the new one?
The Pixel XL? No. No.
Oh, no. The
OnePlus 5.
OnePlus 5. Thank you. And but I've long said that 360 doesn't make as much sense as 180, because 180 is like, you know, watching a stage or watching a show or watching tennis. You know, you can look back and forth and put your attention in multiple places without having to absolutely turn around and not face who you're talking to, which is kind of ridiculous, right? And so I think the 180 for it's I think this whole notion of 360 VR is starting to be brought down to reality. First by AR, first by what Facebook did at F8, and then Google followed, saying, "Yeah, you know, everybody's got a camera. We can add AR to that. That's a lot easier than all this stuff on your face." And same with 180. Yeah, we can show you something and you can move around in it, but you don't have to do this whole immersive thing and turn around and get on a swivel chair in life. So I found that interesting. That and one other number from Susan Wojcicki's talk is that they now serve 1.5 billion logged in viewers on YouTube every month.
I saw that number.
And the world thought they were fools to buy it. This is hard to believe. On average, our viewers spend over an hour a day watching YouTube on mobile devices alone.
1 hour a day. Wow.
That's just average. That's incredible to me.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine how that's true. But
When I was on my vacation, I had one of those Gear 360 cameras, and I made a bunch of 360-degree videos. This is a tour of the Galapagos. You're on the Zodiac boat with me.
Yeah, I watched this one. This was fun.
So I do think that there – I mean, I agree with you that 360 – that's me – 360, you know, has some unique challenges, but for experiential.
Yes.
I mean, this is pretty amazing that you can, you know.
For a concert, a show, a talk
180
show,
is plenty.
Other
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
180 is going to be plenty.
Yeah.
For seeing what you see with just giving you some more choice, 180 is going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a very smart kind of down-to-earth way to look at this. So those are my numbers.
Very good, Jeff. Go speak to your buddy.
I'm going to go and see my new friend.
All right.
Bye, Jeff.
Good to be back. I'm so
just
glad
remember,
I missed you guys.
We love you, Jeff. Are you going to be here next week?
Yes, yes, yes.
See you then.
See you then. Bye.
Stacey, your pick of the week. I think we should both pick the Amazon show.
I'm picking the show because
this is pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, it's fun. I'm going to talk to me next week after I've used it and people have called me and I'll see.
First of all, I like the screens on it. Are really pretty, these images. It's like what was that? Chumby.
Oh, it is like Chumby. So wait, I want to do something because I pulled in an image from WhatsApp to this thing. I pulled in an image that was taken on my camera phone. And it didn't go all the way across. So I actually wanted to pull in a new image because I thought it was weird. And if I wanted to use it as a camera, it was not going to work well. So,
oh, interesting. So you are able to take images from the Echo and put
yes.
it on other things. How do you do a screenshot? Is there's you do it by voice?
I did not find a screenshot. I guess yeah. you try screenshotting.
Sony and Chumby all tried this, but this is qualitatively a different device. I mean, this is kind of amazing.
Well, there's things you can do. I mean, like being able to look at your security camera, and I haven't done the August. I haven't done the skill yet, but I could be able to show you from this right now. Outside my door from my doorbell.
It's kind of amazing.
Right here. So that's pretty cool.
We'll review it in more detail on Saturday on the new Screensavers, and probably next week Stacey and I will both have things to say. I just feel like the reason I want to keep the other one, maybe get more, is I want to have one in the kitchen for sure. Oh, look, we're a little late. Tech News Today, it's 12 minutes late. So, and you know who told me that? My Amazon show. Armpit tattoos, popular on Instagram. No, I hope not.
Okay, whenever I see things like popular on Instagram, I'm just like, shut it down.
I think this would be nice on my bedside table.
Show kid videos.
Netflix has new interactive kid videos, by the way, where you could choose how it ends, what's next.
Okay, so it's showing me these screens, and on some of them, like the Nut Job, which is on Amazon Prime, it's allowing me to play it. Can you?
That's neat. So you can play shows on there. I'm not sure I'd want to do that, but
now.
You could.
Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, I don't know what's happening with Danny Sullivan, but it sounds like he's retiring from search engine land. He posted a video. Did you see this?
When did this happen?
He posted on Facebook. A couple of days ago, my new role as advisor for his company. In other words, he's stepping back as he was in charge of content at Third Door Media. Now he's just an advisor. And I noticed a lot of people saying congratulations, including Walt Mossberg. Congratulations, I'm retiring. So, Danny, if you're retired, I know a podcast that I'd love to have you stop by once in a while.
I was wondering if you were telling me this because you're like, so Stacey, we're going to have to let you go.
Never.
Tiffany's now available.
Never.
I'm like, oh, I understand. Danny's really good.
never would let you go. You're the heart and soul of this operation. I thank you so much for being here. You'll find Stacy at stacyoniot.com and iotpodcast.com. Stacy on IoT is her blog where she covers the Internet of Things, and she does that great podcast with Kevin Toefel, and that's you can get him at both at stacyoniot.com. At GigaStacy on Twitter. Thank you, Stacy. Go have dinner.
Yes.
And some queso. You've earned some queso.
Ooh,
I don't care how you make it, even with Rotel and Velveeta.
Hey, if you try it, you will not. It's a salt bomb, but it's
that's why I'm not trying it, because I know I will never stop eating it. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of many books, including Public Parts, What Would Google Do?, Gutenberg the Geek, Geeks Bearing Gifts, and he blogs at BuzzMachine.com. Both of them make this show what it is. Thank you for being here, and thank you all for watching. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Time, 20:30 UTC. You can watch it live on our website, twit.tv, or youtube.com/twit, or ustream.tv/twit, or twitch.tv/twit. You can chat in the chat room. You can listen live on TuneIn or a variety of other radio program apps. If you join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, sometimes we mention you and say hi. A lot of times we just talk at you. But if you don't want to be here in person, by all means, join us on demand. All of our shows available at twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/twig. Or subscribe. We want to be part of your podcast life. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.